security.
If it wasn't so criminally serious, it would be laughable. We'll look at that appalling track record and ask, can anything be done? In other news.
After 8 children were taken to hospital when they became unwell at a summer camp in a Leicestershire village, a 76-year-old man's been arrested on suspicion of administering poison. I'm LBC's George Ike, live in Stavern.
It's D-Day for the car compo scandal. 23 million people possibly in line for £30 billion if they were missold their vehicles. Dawn Haverson told us.
You put your trust in these companies and you just don't expect to be so misled and taken advantage of, really.
Plus, a new unit to try and cut down on knife crime. We've heard it before, but will this one work? You'll find out from the relevant minister. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the US has announced new tariffs for dozens of countries on Donald Trump's deadline day to strike trade deals. Britain had already reached an agreement with the president to set the baseline tariff on UK exports at 10%. Canada is among the worst hit this morning with a rate of 35% effective immediately. Mr. Trump has insisted the policy will support the US economy.
We're taking in trillions of dollars, making our country very rich and respected again. Everybody said the same thing, all of the NATO countries. Essentially, they said that 1 year ago we were a dead country, now we're the hottest country in the world. Look at you people. We're the hottest country anywhere in the world. We're doing great.
The Supreme Court is set to deliver a landmark decision on car finance compensation. It will decide whether or not to uphold an earlier ruling which found commission payments to car dealers were unlawful. The ruling could pave the way for millions of motorists to apply for compensation. Group litigation specialist Damon Parker says it is a significant moment.
So it's hugely significant for normal people who buy cars in this way. The Supreme Court's looking at the secrecy of commissions, whether a commission has to be fully disclosed or whether a partial disclosure is enough. And this has ramifications to a whole host of other areas of economic life.
President Trump's special envoy is due to inspect an aid distribution site in Gaza. The White House says Steve Witkoff, who held talks in Israel yesterday, will hear firsthand about the dire situation on the ground. Hundreds of people have been killed while waiting for supplies in recent months. A ban on ninja swords is coming into force in England and Wales as part of a commitment to halve knife crime. At least 1,000 of the weapons were handed in as part of a surrender scheme. Heathrow has formally submitted its plans for a third runway and new terminal complex in West London. The total project could cost £49 billion and see the new runway operational in a decade. And England could be without Chris Wokes when the final test against India resumes at the Oval later. The pace bowler went off with a shoulder injury yesterday as the tourists closed on 204 for 6 at the end of day one at the Oval. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 91.32 after closing down 4. Yesterday, the pound buys $1.31 and a euro 15. LBC weather dry and sunny for most, showers developing across central and eastern England, a high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Right, that's it. Come on, lights out. You've got a test tomorrow.
Just 2 minutes. I'm about to reach the next level.
It's going off now.
Yeah, whatever.
Let's see. Where's the app? Oh, here it is. Ha.
What? How?
Oh, no. You're out. Better luck next time.
Mom!
It's game over for late nights on school nights. EE Wi-Fi controls help you get them off the Wi-Fi and into bed. More parents are choosing EE Broadband, the UK's fastest growing broadband provider.
To verify, see ee.co.uk/claims.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven, Friday, August the 1st. The only thing being smashed regarding the gangs are the records of arrivals. 25,000, one in every 12 minutes, a whisker under 1,000 yesterday alone. These promises and pledges are in tatters. What does the government plan to do about it? We'll look at that in more detail. In other news, here's Reform UK leader Nigel Farage on this show yesterday saying the Notting Hill Carnival must be moved.
I wouldn't stop the Notting Hill Carnival. I put it in Hyde Park. We've got the wonderful facility of Hyde Park where we can actually have knife arches so that everyone going in could be checked that they haven't got a weapon.
With the carnival just around the corner, the biggest carnival of its kind in Europe, the second biggest on the planet, our reporter Henry Riley has taken to the air to Notting Hill to see what residents make of that. In other news,
ninja swords are now banned in the UK thanks to Ronan's Law. But what about the boy behind the ban? I'm LBC's Luke Shanahan with the latest.
Plus, what is to be done about the record number of foreign sex offenders in British jails? A new clampdown, as you heard on the LBC News Bulletin there, a new clampdown on knife crime, a new task force. What do I always tell you? If in doubt, form a squad. Plus, the latest person who blames a condition on now because he drives badly.
So, Mario, you got brain freeze?
No, I got brain wave.
Get us back to the station, now!
That's Simon Pegg, starring alongside his friend Nick Frost in Hot Fuzz. Mr. Pegg says he speeds and unfortunately crashes his car because he has ADHD. Is no one ever responsible for anything anymore?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Pitiful. Lamentable. Actually laughable, if it wasn't in some cases deadly serious and certainly criminally serious, in that some of these people have gone on to commit sexual crimes, other assaults. You could laugh at the promises to smash the gangs. Promises that are now hanging in shreds on one day alone. As Nigel Farage said on this programme yesterday, he thought it was coming in at 870. He actually undercooked it for once. It was 898. That's 25,000 so far this year. That is an all-time record. Or another way, One News Media puts it, one person arrives every 12 minutes. Please don't tell me they're all fleeing persecution and torture and religious issues. Please don't give me that utter crock. Some are, most are not. And what has the Prime Minister promised time after time after time to do?
We need to smash the gangs that are running this vile trade, making a huge amount of money.
And take yet another important step to smashing the gangs that are running this absolutely vile trade.
We will secure our borders. We will smash the gangs that undermine our security and deliver the fairness for the working people that we serve.
We are passing a borders bill with extensive powers to smash the gangs.
I often suggest that if you happen to be in an audience and he makes that promise again, just point and laugh. That's the only way he and his well-meaning Home Secretary Yvette Cooper are going to get the message. They are taking us for utter fools. They are without any idea. I don't know whether Rwanda will work. We will always wonder about Rwanda. We'll never know. But at least it would have been worth giving it a try. Now, as I said, these are Mary Poppins pie crust promises. Easy to make and easy to break. 25,000, as I say, so far this year. The earliest that milestone has ever been reached. And by the way, with the weather looking fairly good, that's going to increase. Now, remember this strange idea, a one-in, one-out deal with French President Emmanuel Macron from last month. That was, again, a landmark deal for Sakir.
For the very first time, migrants arriving via small boat will be detained and returned to France in short order. In exchange for every return, a different individual will be allowed to come here via a safe route, controlled and legal, subject to strict security checks and only open to those who have not tried to enter the UK illegally. This will show others trying to make the same journey that it will be in vain.
Why does he think we give it any credence? Now, here's an idea that might mean it won't work. Fewer than 50 migrants would be returned to France each week. Fewer than 50. 898 arrived yesterday. Something I put to Home Secretary Yvette Cooper last month.
What we'll do in terms of the returns and who it is that's returned and the priorities, those will be operational decisions in the way that immigration enforcement always makes operational decisions, but we want that to work effectively. But in terms of people applying to come to the UK, we've said that priority will be given to people who have a connection to the UK, or people who are most likely to be genuine refugees or been targeted by the smuggling gangs as well. But this is a pilot and we will develop it over time, but that principle, that fundamental change is really important.
So it could be fewer than 50 if the number's not fixed?
Well, we will start this and we will grow this. That's the approach that we will take, and that's why we've not fixed numbers.
Right. So, lastly, Home Secretary, it could be fewer than 50. The answer, which is yes.
So, Nick, what you're trying to do is to get me to sort of to play in and speculate about different numbers.
You were the one,
numbers.
The one who said the number's not fixed.
Yeah, it's not fixed. Exactly.
So it could be fewer than 50.
So I'm not going to speculate about the numbers that we'll get to. And, you know, part of the reason that I'm not going to speculate about the numbers is partly because we will develop this over time and it is a pilot, and also partly because there are ways in which we don't want the smuggler gangs to find different ways round this.
Let's turn to Katie Lamb. Katie Lamb is Conservative MP for Weald in God's own land of Kent and is Shadow Home Office Minister and joins me now. Good to have you on, Katie Lamb. Thank you for your time. This is a problem, of course, that has defied previous administrations as well. Can you divine a solution? And if so, what? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, clearly, as you say, it's a problem that hasn't been solved by previous administrations, or we wouldn't be having this conversation in the first place. But the only way to stop people from coming across the channel is to detain them when they arrive and to send them somewhere else. If it's safe to send them home, to send them home. And if it's not, to send them to a third country. That is the only logical answer for how to stop people from making this journey.
What about the pull factor? It was addressed by Emmanuel Macron, the French president, last month. A lot of my listeners think it's a bit too cosy if they get here.
I think that there is a lot in that. I think putting people up in hotels when they arrive, the degree of illegal working that we know that we see, so how much money these people can make when they come here, those things combined are a massive pull factor for people to come. And you said earlier, rightly, not all of these people are fleeing persecution, but some are. I mean, that's the case for the whole journey. But the immediate part, none of them are fleeing persecution. There is no war in France.
You mentioned France. We have sent hundreds of millions of euros through the years to try and encourage them to do their job. I think there is one piece of video where a couple of gendarmes or border force slash a dinghy with fairly sharp knives. How much do you think the French are doing to try and combat this issue?
Not enough. And I also think it's fundamental that we don't outsource something like controlling our own border, which was fundamental to whether or not we function as a country, to another nation.
If the Conservatives were to regain power and you were in the Home Office, what would your policy be then? People are picked up by the Border Force or the RNLI in the middle of the Channel. They're brought to Dover. What happens next in your book?
Well, once they actually reach the country, and I do actually think that there's more to be done to stop that from happening in the first place, but if they are to reach Britain, then they have to be either immediately sent home, and there'll have to be a combination of measures involving
sent home, sent straight back to Afghanistan?
Wherever they have come from, if it is safe to send them there.
Right.
If it's really not safe to send them there, or if we can't establish who they are, which happens quite often,
yes,
because, of course, it's in people's interest not to bring their documents with them,
yes,
then that they're sent somewhere else, which is safe, but there isn't here. And ideally,
but
I think
it's vague,
not
Katie
in Europe.
Lamb, respectfully, somewhere. Do you mean like a Rwanda, a different Rwanda?
Yes,
do you mean,
exactly.
So, right, somewhere else in the world?
Somewhere else in the world.
I see. Okay.
And it has to be reasonably far away. I mean, one of the many, many problems with the French deal is if you send people straight back to France, well, that's where they've just come from.
Yes.
So you were rightly saying we don't know the details of the French
yes,
deal, quote unquote. And one of the questions that I would like to know is, do people count afresh every time? Or if somebody makes the journey every week, are we going to have to take 52 people from France just for that one person?
Therefore, the idea, you may recall some months ago, the Prime Minister went to Albania and met with his counterpart and started talking about a sort of resort. And the look of the Albanian Prime Minister was of absolute shock and disgust, because there's nothing he wanted to do because they're working closely with Italy and they didn't want a one-night stand with the United Kingdom. But that's the sort of thing that you're looking to.
Well, the Albanians are clearly not interested in that. To be honest, even Eastern Europe is already on the journey that these people are making. It's just a day further back. So really what you're looking for, and as you rightly said, the Rwanda scheme never started, it was never tried,
right,
and it was one of the, to scrap it, was one of the first things the government did when they came in, which was a totally ideological decision.
Katie, do you think
I do, actually. I think if you had planes taking off, if people had arrived, been detained, in short order after detention, been sent either home if it's safe, or to Rwanda, people would stop crossing the channel.
Lastly, Nigel Farage was here taking your calls yesterday, and he referenced the fact how there's been an impact of a speech that you gave has actually been effectively partially blocked. Can you just remind the listeners what that was and appraise them of exactly what's gone on there, Katie?
So I gave a speech earlier this year in response to the government minister about the rape and grooming gangs that we've seen across the country, calling at that time for a national inquiry. When I gave the speech, a national inquiry hadn't been announced, since it has. And it included quotes directly from victims and from judgments on criminals. And that speech is now age-verified on platforms like Twitter, X, which means that unless you give information about your age, you can't view that, even though I gave that speech as an elected Member of Parliament on the floor of the House of Commons, quoting directly from victim testimony.
Your reaction, lastly, to that?
I think any rule that says that the people of Britain can't hear what their elected representatives are saying in their own parliament is not working.
Grateful for your time. Katie Lamb, thank you. You're Conservative MP for the Weald of Kent, and you are Shadow Home Office Minister. Calls coming in on this. Emma, you will be the first caller. Also, later in this hour, it's Car Compo Day. 23 million of... And I think it might be us, actually. I think I might have bought a car on this. Could be in line for a payout. Group litigation specialist Damon Parker.
It's hugely significant for normal people who buy cars in this way. And this has ramifications to a whole host of other areas of economic life.
We'll explain exactly what it means and also whether you might be up for liable for some compensation later in the hour. 7.15, LBC News headlines now. Thomas Watts.
Donald Trump has announced his latest wave of trade tariffs, including a 35% rate on Canadian goods. The Supreme Court is to rule on whether motorists could be entitled to billions of pounds in compensation over their finance agreement. Two senior American officials will visit Gaza later to inspect a food distribution site. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for most, a high of 22 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. Three lanes are closed on the M4 due to emergency repairs westbound from Junction 7 for Slough West to Junction 8 for Maidenhead. There are delays on the M4 onto the elevated section eastbound from Junction 3 for Hayes to Junction 2 for Brentford. In Neasden, there are queues on the A406 North Circular Road westbound from the M1 Junction 1 for Staples Corner. That's to the Neasden interchange and is in the roadworks area. There are delays in Wapping on A1203, the highway westbound before Tower Bridge coming from the Limehouse Link Tunnel. The A23 Brighton Road and Purley is stop starts both ways near Old Lodge Lane due to emergency repairs. And there's a reduced service on London Northwestern between Bedford and Bletchley.
This is LBC.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV, plus change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
Explore the world in a way that respects the people and places you visit with Intrepid Travel. As UK and Ireland GM Joanna Reeve explains,
our trips are all about small groups guided by amazing local leaders. So we really want you to experience the places most tourists overlook, which is great for you, but also it's really good for the communities you visit. So think about travelling out of season, look for experiences far beyond the typical tourist hotspots, avoid crowds, and visit a Greek farm for some delicious local food.
To find out more, search Intrepid Travel. We're not over tourism.
Do you like the sound of work that has plenty of giggles? Where you'll build lifelong skills, as well as wobbly towers. Where you'll feel part of a team, or even have the chance to lead one. Where every little thing you do makes a big difference. Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You've got it. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Societies Rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's 19 minutes after 7. Emma, you're going to be the first caller. I'm just going to read you just some of the front pages. And only a government that has spectacularly lost level of support in world record time can be tone deaf to the constant slew of stories that we do on this programme, stories you see on the television and newspaper front pages, and do nothing about it. The Daily Mail proofs Starmer's Smash the Gangs campaign's a joke. The Daily Telegraph, Labour bid to silence migrant hotel critics. You could all say, well, they're all right-wing titles, all right? The Times, in a related story, 1 in 8 of all prisoners were born overseas. The Daily Express, record number of foreign sex offenders in British prisons. Only a government of this level, these level of clunkers, could be so far out of touch. Quickly to the LBC app. They're giving you all the latest details on the Trump tariffs. A big day for America. Canada on the receiving end of a 35% tariff. We'll give you full details of that in our regular look at the world of finance in around about 15 minutes or so time. One last one. Let's go at random. Let's go to the Sun website, which tells us that Harry Redknapp's £5 million mansion down in Dorset has been targeted by thieves. It is thought possibly they looked at it on one of those sites where people sell their homes, like a Rightmove. A £5 million mansion and a lot of his wife Sandra's jewellery gone, so commiserations to Mr. and Mrs. Redknapp. Let's hope they get the people responsible for that. 7:20, let's get your calls on this now. Let's go to Epping and Emma. Emma, tell us about the situation in the town today and how people are feeling. Good morning.
Hello, Nick. Hi. Well, I think people are feeling very mixed. It feels a bit like a tale of two cities at the moment in Epping.
Go ahead.
There's a very loud, lots of voices who seem to be very angry and outraged about the local hotel, which has been used to house asylum seekers. Yep. The Bell Hotel. These people who are kind of anti-asylum seekers staying there are very loud, very aggressive, use very awful language, and anybody who kind of disagrees with their point of view is shot down and almost lynched online. I think it was two Sundays ago, we had our first big protest in the town. And it was a Sunday night, and I was hearing about everything that was going on. I had friends who were walking through kind of groups, and I do mean this genuinely, groups of masked men mainly, you know, draped in the St. George's flag, being incredibly aggressive. And later, as you know, there were numerous arrests because people had attacked policemen, police women, police vans. And I'd never experienced anything like it in my life. And I remember sitting at home thinking, I've never felt unsafe in Epping. It has been a wonderful place to bring up my children. I've never had any concerns, really, about safety. And there I was with people marauding down the high street and thinking, I don't know if I can bring my children up in this town anymore. It doesn't feel like a place that I want to be. It was then that I started to speak out a little bit about it locally. And I have to say, on the back of that, I have now met a huge number of local parents who hearteningly feel very similarly to me, don't like the fact that our town seems to have been hijacked by groups of outsiders. And I mean far right people coming into the town to cause trouble. And that is why they're there. Yes. Got nothing to do with the safety of women and children. And, you know, I can talk about that more if you want me to.
Yes.
Who have kind of taken over the town and left a lot of us feeling really, really scared and quite nervous about putting our heads above the parapet.
So, Emma, what is to be done? Because there is nothing racist in you and fellow people in Epping being concerned about the safety of your children or your grandchildren. That is not racist. So how are you going to make sure that your voices are heard and the others are not?
So, firstly, my voice is not anti-asylum seeker. I have no problem with them being in the hotel. I don't think it's great, but I certainly don't believe in going to violently protest outside where groups of some of them are vulnerable people who've been through an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that for a fact because I know people who work for local charities who are kind of tuned in to some of the people and some of the stories from people living in that hotel. I am not anti-asylum seekers. I'm anti the people coming in causing trouble and stirring up hatred, vitriol, and anger. Now, do I think there is a serious, legitimate question about people arriving in the country and seeking asylum? Of course I do. Mm-hmm. Of course I do. I'm glad I'm not a politician and that I'm the person who has to have answers to this, because I honestly don't know what the answer is. And it's not a problem that's going away. It is.
I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Emma, do stay in touch. You've put the case so coherently and so valiantly, actually, for the decent folk of that town in Essex. I really do want to hear from you again. I have to move now, only for time reasons. But, Emma, good luck. Have a safe weekend. Thank you very much for your input. And we will return to that conversation. More calls coming in. John, you'll be the next caller. But let's go to that extraordinary story that you've already heard on news bulletins here. A pensioner has been arrested on suspicion of poisoning 8 children at a Christian summer camp after they fell ill. LBC's reporter George Ike reports from the camp and in Stathen. George, good morning.
Nick, good morning. Police were called to this summer camp here in Stathen, which is a very small, quiet, rural village in Leicestershire in the Vale of Beaver area, following reports that 8 children had fallen unwell here. They were all taken to hospital as a precaution after being triaged in a local village hall. And subsequently, a 76-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of administering poison or a noxious thing with intent to injure, aggrieve or annoy. Assistant Chief Constable James Avery has given an update on the investigation.
A report was received by Leicestershire Police concerning children feeling unwell at a summer camp in Canal Lane, Stathen. Following the report, officers were deployed alongside colleagues from the East Midlands Ambulance Service to safeguard those children involved. I can confirm that a 76-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of administering poison or a noxious substance. He remains in custody at this time.
Now, Nick, just before speaking to you, I flew a drone just above where I'm standing at the police cordon and was able to see the site where police are investigating. And we can see what looks to be sort of 2 bouncy castles or inflatable slide type things deflated on the floor, as well as a collection of benches gathered around a brick circle fire pit and a huge building which from the front looks like a farmhouse with 2 annexes on the side and also has a sports hall and catering facilities. Now, there is still an increased police presence here in Stathen and a lot of media attention, which as someone who lives in one of the neighbouring villages, I can confirm we're not really used to seeing that sort of scale of things out in the sticks here. The local MP, Edward Agar, who represents Melton and Syston, called the investigation shocking and deeply concerning and has also asked the police to give the public as much information as they can without prejudicing any investigation. Now, that investigation is being led by the East Midlands Special Operation Unit's Major Incident Team, and that brings the specialists and top detectives from nearby Derbyshire, Leicestershire, Lincolnshire, Northamptonshire and Nottinghamshire Police all together to give them the best resources for their investigation. LBC's been told by the force that the pensioner has been in their custody since Monday afternoon when he was arrested at a nearby pub, and they've got until 4:44 this afternoon before they must either charge or release him. And Leicestershire Police have also referred themselves to the IOPC, who told LBC the investigation will look at whether there were any breaches of professional behaviour, namely a failure to carry out duties and responsibilities that resulted in a delay in Leicestershire Police's response to what was later declared a critical incident.
George Ike reporting, 7:28. John's in Romford. John, your view on this migrant scandal and these failed promises and pledges. Good morning.
Yeah, morning, Nick. Look, I'm not the best at putting my point across, but yeah. I think it's a bit of a flawless plan. We have our own processing centre in, I don't know, France, Calais, somewhere. Any boats that are crossing, we pick them up on the radar, tow them back into this processing centre, which is on the coast somewhere. It's got a dock in it, the boat's dock in there, process the people in this processing centre.
I like the idea, but that would mean France would have to allow us to effectively use their water, to use their waters, and they're unlikely to do that, to operate in what are their territorial waters.
Yeah, I think we need to come to some kind of agreement with that because, I think it would work. Also, if there's people, it would deter people taking the boats. They can then walk into this process centre, submit their paperwork, And then obviously come back, get a date to come back and then review and go along them lines.
I like the idea. It's when you think we've sent 700 million in total, 700 million euros, and we've got no cooperation from the French. I'm not knocking your idea, it makes perfect sense, but I just don't think the French are going to sign up to it, lastly, John. That's the problem.
Yes, I think, yeah.
I don't know why you say you didn't. You put your point, there's no problem at all. You put your point across brilliantly. John, I love it, but it ain't going to work because of the French connection. Simple as that. Have a safe weekend. Thank you. Coming up after the news.
It's another day of twists and turns in Trump's tariff tango. Some deals have been struck, some tariffs have been extended. What does it all mean? I'm Christian May from City AM, and I'll be discussing this with Nick shortly.
Plus, actor Simon Pegg, who has unfortunately crashed his rental car while on holiday and has a long and checkered history of speeding offences, he has been banned. It's all because he has ADHD. So no one's ever responsible for anything now. Is that right? 7:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News headlines, Thomas Watts.
Donald Trump has set out the latest escalation of his trade war, including a 35% tariff on Canada. The new rates will apply to dozens of countries that haven't been able to strike deals with the US. The Supreme Court is to rule on whether motorists could be due billions of pounds in finance compensation. The justices will decide whether or not to uphold an earlier ruling on secret commission paid to car dealers. Two senior US officials are to make an unprecedented visit to Gaza later. Special envoy Steve Witkoff and Mike Huckabee, the US ambassador to Israel, will inspect a food distribution site. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many, showers developing in central and eastern England, a high of 22 degrees.
This is LBC.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Am I on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6.
T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:32, come back to your reactions to the only thing that's being smashed are not the gangs, but the records for arrivals, and we'll come back to that conversation. Now, to the United States, and if we're talking Trump, we've got to be talking tariffs.
We're taking in trillions of dollars, making our country very rich and respected again. Everybody said the same thing, all of the NATO countries. Essentially, they said that 1 year ago we were a dead country, now we're the hottest country in the world. Look at you people, we're the hottest country anywhere in the world. We're doing great.
Well, someone who will reflect on just how much heat there is being generated is Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM. How hot is the US? Christian, good morning.
Well, I mean, if you believe the president, it's the hottest country in the world right now. And to be honest, he has a point. The economy is growing very effectively. Tariffs are not pain-free. There will be consequences to these decisions. But at the moment, at least, probably not because of, certainly in spite of these tariffs, the US economy is doing very well. But look, a lot of people thought he was going to chicken out. You know, we've had so much marching up to the top of the hill, marching down again, 90-day pause, deal, side deals, little summits. But
this was Taco, wasn't it? This was the famous Taco line, Trump always chickens out.
Yeah, people in the markets have been referring to the taco trade, placing bets in the market on the basis that they don't think Trump's going to follow through. And he has pulled back from some of his more dramatic initial plans. And yet, here we go. We now have a full list of where things stand. There are still some countries in the middle of negotiations, including China. Canada has taken a pretty heavy slap of 35% tariffs that kicked in today, although not on all goods. Mexico is being severely punished with 25% tariffs on cars, 50% on metal. They kick in another 90 days. We know the European Union has had its 15% tariffs agreed, along with a load of other conditions about quite how much they have to buy from America, essentially protection money, that sort of old school, you know, buy from us and we'll look after you approach of the mob. And Brazil has had a serious punishment beating as well, facing 50% tariffs on most goods. There are still some sectors facing questions around pharmaceuticals. The UK, we consider itself in the grand scheme of things to be sitting pretty, given the deal that it is negotiated. Some of the most interesting ones look Switzerland, nearly 40% tariffs on imports from Switzerland. We know that it's 20% in Bangladesh, Thailand, Taiwan, although there's questions around semiconductors still. So this is fairly major stuff from Trump. Although he has still announced that there will be some further negotiations and opportunities, if people thought that he was going to row back from all of this, they've got another thing coming.
All right, let's move to matters at home. All eyes on the Supreme Court at, I think, 4:30 this afternoon. It's Car Compo Day. Just explain, because a lot of listeners, this will be going on in the background. If they think they might be affected, what are they going to listen out for? What do they have to do? Christian.
So this is one of the most consequential and ongoing financial, regulatory, legal battles that the city has ever seen. It is up there with PPI mis-selling scandal, if you remember that. And we all endured adverts for that for some time. This dates back a number of years to a simple case of an individual who took a bank to court or complained about a bank because he discovered that as part of the motor finance deal he took out with the bank to finance the purchase of a car, commission was paid to the car dealer, which this person wasn't aware of. And so this sparked an extraordinary legal saga, which has now dragged in many of the high street banks and will conclude after a series of rulings today at 4:30. Why is that time important? Well, because it's after the markets close. We have followed every twist and turn of this story, and we have broken stories that have had dramatic impacts on the share price of banks. We published a story a couple of months ago on one of the latest legal twists that took tens of millions of pounds off the value of banks. I mean, you know, that's just the consequence of quite how fast moving this story is. So at 4:35 today, we will learn quite the extent to which banks are on the hook here. Now, the Treasury is very alarmed because we're talking about tens of billions of pounds of financial hits to the banks in terms of compensation and redress. Rachel Reeves has tried to intervene. The Treasury tried to intervene in the court case to say, can we have a word in this? And the court said, no, you're not
that's
relevant.
Fairly, that's fairly unprecedented, isn't it, for a Chancellor to get to sort of roll his or her sleeves up to that degree, Christian?
It is unusual, and it remains the case that the government is now considering laws that would actually limit the amount of compensation that could be handed down, because motor finance lending is a very substantial part of financial services ecosystem and the motor industry. And there are concerns that if this goes all the way, it could have a dramatic effect. Let's just look at some of the numbers. Some of the banks involved here, I mean, Lloyds, I think, is on the hook. They set aside nearly £500 million to cover compensation claimants. Many other banks, Santander and others, have set aside hundreds of millions as well. So, you know, the stakes are very high. Ultimately, once the court case has announced, the Financial Conduct Authority has said they will at that point then announce the results of their own investigation, which will include measures or could include measures to compel banks to proactively tell people if they were caught up in this. So although there are many, many, many schemes and adverts to say that come to us and we'll find out for you, it might be the case that banks end up having to ring people up and say, look, I'm afraid we did this to you some time ago. And people could get some thousands of pounds in compensation.
We'll keep an eye on that. Lastly, what should we take when the man who they couldn't wake up prior to closing Heathrow Airport, Thomas Voldby, says we can move the M25 overnight? Christian.
I think he's planning to go to bed one night without his phone on and wake up and find that the M25 has been
moved 6 feet to the right. I mean, this is extraordinary, isn't it, Christian?
Well, he's wide awake today, Nick. We discussed the sort of wildcard bid from the Aurora Group to build the new Heathrow runway yesterday. Today, Heathrow have announced their own plans. And they've said that as part of that, they can build a tunnel over the M25. Build a bridge over the M25 and a runway over it.
You must always know where bridges and tunnels start and end with me, Christian. You know that. Do go on.
I do. Absolutely do. They said that, look, what was quite simple, we'll simply spend a couple of billion quid building a new section of the M25 alongside the existing one, and when we're ready to switch all cars over to it, we'll just do it overnight. So it sounds quite simple, but this is obviously a multi-billion pound project. The government is right behind it, one way or another, whoever's going to end up doing it. They said it will create 100,000 jobs, be a massive economic boost. Critics say this will just be the next HS2 and that this will go on and on. Costs will balloon. Airlines are sceptical because of the cost of this, if Heathrow do this, will be passed on ultimately in higher landing fees to airlines. So airport expansion is a hot topic. Gatwick is keen. Other airports around the country are keen to expand. And the Heathrow expansion debate is now a very lively one indeed.
Christian Mayer is editor-in-chief at City AM. Enjoy your weekend. Thank you, Christian. By the way, we, obviously not on my watch, but I will watch for that result or listen out for that result from the Supreme Court. And if there is the possibility that the finance companies have to contact you, companies such as Santander or Lloyds, we'll do a big piece on it on Monday to make sure that you don't miss out. If you're due some compensation, if you were effectively missold, don't worry. If you hear it on the news, you say, well, I don't know, what have I got to do? We will have a comprehensive piece on it for you on Monday. Let's come back to the conversation we're having here. One migrant arrives every 12 minutes. Smash the gangs, just a joke. Paul in Kingston, hollow words from a hollow prime minister. Word salad, all nonsense, bring on Rwanda. Christopher in Cardiff, it's been mentioned it would be extremely dangerous to turn the boats around mid-channel, so why not, when the boats arrive, refuel them, turn them around and send them back to France? Well, again, there's the danger. How would you feel if people then toppled out of the boat? And again, as I said to the earlier caller, John, that requires cooperation from the French, and it just isn't forthcoming. Sandra's in Lymington. Sandra, have you got a solution or a view? Good morning.
Well, it's really a view. Again, a few days ago, I heard that number going out by a member of the government. We've returned 35,000 so far this year. And that's the third time in the last month I've had that going. I've had that being said by
a
member of the government.
Yes, you will hear that a lot. Yes, you will hear
and
that.
And you were the only one that tried to challenge the person. It was a few days ago.
Yes.
And it was just glossed over. But you're right. If the public did see that happening, we think, or at least something's happening, it must be a lie. It must be, because you never see it.
Well, you may not have heard, we did a bit of research on that, and they did show some video back in February, and they stopped that because it was deemed to be breaching the human rights of the people who were being deported.
Oh, that's a good excuse, isn't it?
Any excuse they can find. Now, my argument would be, well, let's not see their faces. Let's just, if needs be, what they call pixelate, digitise, obscure their face. Just see their backs going on board a plane. Just show some activity to give us something to cling to.
But, Nick, I don't think it's happening.
Well,
I don't think it is. And, you know, there must be millions of people like me that are thinking, well, come on then. Where's the films?
Stay tuned. We've got a government minister coming on. I will challenge her again about this on your behalf, Sandra. Let's see what she says. 7:42. Other stories. And as if we've not got enough problems with industrial unrest in our medical profession, it could now possibly spread to our nurses. Alan Jones, industrial correspondent for PA Media, joins us with all the details. Good to hear you again, Alan. Trust you well, sport. What's the latest then with our army, our brave army of angels, men and women who make up our nurses?
Yeah, indeed. Morning, Nick. Good to talk to you again as well. Well, yesterday, the Royal College of Nursing announced the result of a consultation it's been holding amongst its members. And it's no great surprise, massive rejection, if you like, of the 3.6% award the government gave them recently. When that award was made, the leadership of that union described it as grotesque. So, you know, very, very, lots more anger. And it looks like we could be heading for strikes by nurses and doctors and other health workers as well. There's other unions gearing up for industrial action ballots as well. Back to where we were, you know, 2 years ago, you will remember that all the strikes we had 2 years ago, including tens of thousands of NHS workers. And I'm afraid it looks like we might be returning to that.
I don't know any journalist in this country closer to the industrial, the employment landscape than you, Alan Jones. What's morale like in the NHS?
Morale is appalling, actually, and has been since the pandemic. And I do think a lot of these disputes are a bit of a hangover from the pandemic. All these people put their lives on the line every day. They came out of it, you know, expecting to have a decent pay rise, expecting for conditions to improve. And they basically haven't. I think some of the most amazing things that were said yesterday by the Royal College of Nursing was that nurses are now, and I'm quoting here, struggling to keep patients safe because of low staffing, widespread vacancies, nurses still leaving for jobs in supermarkets and on and in other areas. You know, the NHS, I think, is still on its knees as it has been for a couple of years.
Lastly, by the very nature of the work you do for PA Media, you have to have an independent view, an independent voice. When Conservative and others point to the government's action last year in giving in, that word's in single quotes, giving in to the doctors' pay demand, have they, in a way, been authors of their own misfortune, in your view, Alan?
No, I don't think so, honestly. I mean, just over a year ago, Labour came in two very, very long-running, dangerous, damaging disputes. So they settled the train drivers' dispute, as you remember.
Yep.
And the second one was the one in the NHS. I think most people thought that was a really good thing to do. So, you know, the government is unbelievably disappointed that this has reared itself up again. They want to concentrate on their 10-year plan for the NHS. But I'm afraid by the end of the summer, we could be talking about widespread strikes again in the NHS.
Look after yourself, mate. Hope to catch up with you soon. Alan Jones, peerless industrial correspondent. He's working for PA Media. All right, just around the corner is the biggest carnival of its kind, second biggest in the world, biggest in Europe.
Ahead of the Notting Hill Carnival later this month, Nigel Farage says it's been appalling for residents and should be moved. I'm LBC's Henry Riley, asking locals if they agree.
7:45 LBC News headlines now. Thomas Watts.
The US has announced new tariffs for dozens of countries on Donald Trump's deadline day to strike trade deals. The Supreme Court is set to deliver a landmark ruling on car finance compensation. And US Special Envoy Steve Witkoff is to visit an aid distribution site in Gaza. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for many, some showers in central and eastern areas, a high of 22 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. There are delays on the M4 onto the elevated section eastbound from Junction 3 for Hayes to Junction 2 for Brentford. In Neasden, there are queues on the A406 North Circular Road westbound from the M1 Junction 1 for Staples Corner to the Neasden interchange. That's in the roadworks area. There are delays in Wapping on A1203, the highway westbound before Tower Bridge coming from the Limehouse Link Tunnel. Things are slow in Battersea on Battersea Bridge northbound from Prince of Wales Drive to Chelsea Embankment. The A23 Brighton Road and Purley is stop starts both ways near Old Lodge Lane due to emergency repairs. And there's reduced service on London Northwestern between Bedford and Bletchley and minor delays on the Bakerloo line.
LBC.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £145 million.
That's enough to get your hands in the air.
Woo! Wow, you really don't care.
Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
At ulizprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulizprosperity.com.
Summer's here, and it's not just sunshine brightening your days. Big cash prizes could be coming your way with Win Plus, as well as chances to win the latest tech and loads more. Enter now at winplus.co.uk. Win Plus. Great prizes, real winners. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app now.
News your way.
Now in your hands.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow. Rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn. I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda, clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advance tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see vitabiotics.com.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:49 now. As they never cease to remind us, this government was elected on a promise of policy for change, and one change that does seem to be coming about is that extra police officers on the beat have helped cut what's called knife-enabled robberies or knife-enabled crime. Here with more details is Labour MP and Policing Minister Dame Diana Johnson. Good to have you on, Dame Diana. Can you run through those figures for the benefit of my listeners? Morning to you.
Good morning. So when we came into power, there had been a 14% increase in knife-enabled robbery in the previous year. The Home Secretary set up a task force in the 7 police force areas where the knife crime is concentrated. And what we're really pleased to see is a reduction of 6% in those 7 areas overall, which is very positive. Obviously, there is much more to do. And what's been really interesting is learning from some of the good examples, particularly the West Midlands, who've seen a 25% decrease in knife robbery. What they've been using, drones, dogs, unpredictable patrolling, using various methods. And we think that's really important, that all police forces that are facing knife crime problems are using those same methods. And in London particularly, there's been lots of work around schools and making sure that young people on their way to or from school have got the protection they need, because often young people have mobile phones stolen from them with the threat of a knife.
Dame Diana, what is unpredictable patrolling?
Well, it's when you're not patrolling at the same time every day and you come for 20 minutes. There's something called hotspot patrolling where you come for a certain amount of time, quite a short period of time, and then it's unpredictable about when you'll next be there, to provide that level of uncertainty perhaps to those people who want to do us harm. There's also this summer an initiative around our neighbourhood policing guarantee, where you'll know we've agreed there'll be 13,000 additional police in our community. This year, by the end of March, we'll see 3,000 of that 13,000. And this summer, we're having a real concentration in town centres with police, with local council enforcement officers, with local authorities, to really bear down on some of the crime we see in our town centres, antisocial behaviour, theft from shops, things like that, which are so important to local communities, that there is action being taken and a police presence.
You mentioned drones. How are they deployed?
Well, the West Midlands particularly use drones, and that's about obtaining information about what's going on in a local area. I mean, drones is an emerging technology that I'm very keen that police forces make more use of. You know, in the past, we've had helicopters. Obviously, we only have a limited number of helicopters, but drone technology is something that's really now coming into its own, along with things like live facial recognition. Again, a technology that I want policing to be investing in.
there are concerns, civil liberty concerns, about the increase of facial recognition, Minister. You'll be aware that the Met is under a degree of challenge over that. You're completely relaxed about that aspect of the conversation?
Well, I fully recognise those concerns that people have, and what I want to ensure is that policing have very clear guidelines, a code about how they deploy live facial recognition, that the algorithms they use are not going to in any way be disproportionate in the people that they pick up. We know that there's been racial disparity in the past. That's being looked at and worked on. So I want policing to feel confident about the use of live facial recognition, but also for the communities to feel confident. And when I was in Croydon last year, I saw one of these deployments, and I had members of the community coming up to me and saying, we want more of this. We want this to be something that happens so we feel safe in our local areas. So I think, you know, there are different views on this, but I think it's a technology that the Prime Minister has been keen to say we need to make better use of.
Well, this is obviously good news. Congratulations to you, but I'm sure you'd want to say congratulations to the men and women who are actually out on
absolutely.
The beat doing it. But
absolutely.
So what are the seven areas then, geographical areas?
So the West Midlands, and can I just do a shout out really to the Chief Constable in the West Midlands, yeah. Craig Guildford, because he's been leading from the top to make sure that this is really had the focus that it needs.
Oh,
in terms
he's
of
joining me on the show next week. I've just been told in my ear, if you'll understand the expression.
Well,
so I look forward to hearing with I look forward to speaking with the Chief Constable. So thank you. He's here, by the way, for my listeners' benefit. This clearly great Chief Constable is here taking your calls next week. Apologies, Dame Diana, but I'm going to use that ad if I may.
He is really excellent and one to be commended. Greater Manchester, now they've not seen such a dramatic fall, and we're wanting to work more with them.
Yep.
We've got the Metropolitan Police, obviously, yep. because there is a lot of knife crime in London. We've also got Avon and Somerset yep. in our list. How many have I got up to there?
You've got four. So I'm sure you know them off the top of your head.
I do, yes. The West Midlands, Greater yep. Manchester, Avon and Somerset, the Met. Now you'll have to forgive me. It's very early in the morning, but I do know them.
I can hear paper rustling. Minister.
Yes, because I've got it in front of me with the actual
reductions.
You
don't think that perhaps you should know this, Minister?
No, I do know. Sorry, it's just very early in the morning.
Right,
sorry.
Yes, I've been aware of that for 22 years.
Right, West Midlands. Oh, British Transport Police. We mustn't forget them because
BTP.
they've also had a role.
I think you need to go to Yorkshire is the other area, isn't
and
it?
West Yorkshire, of course, yeah. How
and
could
one
I miss
more.
West Yorkshire?
One more. Stay in Yorkshire.
Well, it's not Humberside and it's
not
North Yorkshire,
so where else
it must be South Yorkshire.
There you go.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you think perhaps you might have known that, Minister?
I'm sorry. There's a lot going on in my head, but yeah.
Okay, there's a lot going on in the field of beating crime as well. Ronan's Law,
yes.
I think, comes in as of today, Minister.
It does, and that. Can I just again pay tribute to Pooja Kanda, who
just remind everybody who Pooja is. Of course,
so she tragically lost her son Ronan. The person who killed her son, the two individuals, they had a ninja sword that they'd been able to buy online. Tragically killed Ronan, and Pooja and her family have campaigned to see this ban on these swords. And today we're introducing that ban. It was something we promised last year in our manifesto. And it's introduced today. We've just had 30 days of being able to surrender these swords, and we know there's about 1,000 weapons that have been brought into police stations and put in surrender bins over the course of the last month. But from today, it is a criminal offence to possess, to manufacture, to import a ninja sword. And it's part of a package of measures. It's not the only thing we're going to do. We've got various other measures, including putting fines on tech executives who allow content to be put on websites, glorifying weapons or selling knives in a way that's glorifying violence. We're also introducing stronger age verification checks, making clear that who orders a knife has to be over 18 and it has to be delivered to that person.
Okay.
So there are various other measures we're introducing through the Crime and Policing Bill.
Okay. On a related conversation, you've probably had sight of a front page today, the Daily Express, record number of foreign sex offenders in British prisons. There's a record number of foreign prisoners, £360 million a year to keep 6,673 convicted overseas nationals behind bars. Dame Diana, what are you going to do about this?
So we want to remove foreign national offenders as quickly as we can. And as you know, there are proposals to reduce the time that they have to serve before they can be removed from 50% of their sentence to 30%. Over the course of the last year, we've seen a 14% increase in the number of foreign national offenders returned. That's over 5,200. And we're also putting in special trained officers into prisons to aid the process of removing these foreign national offenders. So we're very, very well aware of what we need to do to get these people out of the country.
Well, talking about that, lastly, you'll be aware that yesterday the 898 people made the crossing, the migrant crossing in the English Channel. That's 25,000 so far this year. Your government's promise to smash the gangs is a risible joke. So what happens there?
Look, I am as frustrated as you are about these figures, but you can't say that the government's plan to deal with the gangs who are behind this awful trade in human misery is failing, because at the moment...
Well, why would more people be coming if it's not failing?
Because at the moment, we've got, as you know, the first ever deal that we've been able to do with France in terms of a returns
policy.
But
that's a one in, one out, maximum 50 a week.
It's a start.
Oh, Minister, 898 came yesterday.
Can I just say as well, one of the other important things, and I know this because I've been to northern France and seen the French police, how they operate on the beaches, one of the concerns has always been that the French police will not stop people once they've got into the boats in shallow water. And through the work of the Home Secretary and the Prime Minister, that is now being looked at as to whether the police in France will intervene early on to stop
people...
But
why is it being looked at now? You've been in power for 13 months.
Well, this is something that actually is there is movement. The previous government couldn't arrange any of this. This is through the negotiations that we've had. There's also work going on through the Borders Security Asylum and Immigration Bill, provisions in there to introduce more counter-terrorism style provision to actually go after these gangs, to go after their money. And of course, it is worth reflecting on the fact that, you know, the Conservatives and Reform voted against that bill and the provisions in there to really help us go after the gangs.
Lastly, when I speak to some of your colleagues, they point to the fact that 35,000 people have been removed from this country.
They have, yes.
But we never see video or documented evidence of that. Why not? Can you imagine how it might change the public mood if we saw flights from Stansted or Southend or wherever of these people being taken out of the country? Why don't we see that, Minister?
Well, that's a very good point, actually, because it is 35,000 and going up.
OK,
and
I'll tell you now, some of my listeners don't believe it.
OK.
Now, I don't think you'd misrepresent yourself to that level, because you're a government minister. You're on the King's brief. You wouldn't like it. People want to see it, Minister. Okay. Do you understand?
Yeah, no, I can fully understand that. And I think when there's so much misinformation about, particularly on social media, I take your point about actually identifying and evidencing what's happening.
Well,
but 35,000 and rising are leaving the country under this government.
Well, maybe discuss that with Yvette Cooper or indeed the Prime Minister the next time you have time. I do think it could be a mood changer with this issue. Congratulations to you, and more importantly to the police officers who brought this about. Extra officers help cut knife crime by 25%. That's nothing but good news, and thank you for all your input. Dame Diana Johnson, Policing Minister. 1 minute after 8 on LBC. Time for the news headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Donald Trump has unveiled the next step of his tariff war against dozens of US trading partners. New tax rates of up to 41% will apply to countries that haven't been able to strike trade agreements with the US. They will take effect in a week, but Canada is facing an immediate hike to 35%. Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM.
We now have a full list of where things stand. There are still some countries in the middle of negotiations, including China. Canada has taken a pretty heavy slap. Mexico is being severely punished with 25% tariffs on cars, 50% on metal. They kick in another 90 days. And Brazil has had a serious punishment beating as well, facing 50% tariffs on most goods.
The UK has already agreed a deal, putting the baseline tariff on British goods at 10%. A landmark ruling will be made by the Supreme Court later on car finance compensation. It'll decide whether or not to uphold an earlier judgment on secret commission paid to car dealers. It could see millions of motorists eligible for payouts at enormous cost to finance firms.
Donald Trump's special envoy is due to inspect an aid distribution site in Gaza. The White House says Steve Witkoff, who held talks in Israel yesterday, will hear firsthand about the dire situation on the ground. Hundreds of people have been killed while waiting for supplies in recent months. A ban on ninja swords is coming into force in England and Wales this morning. The legislation, Ronan's Law, was introduced after the murder of 16-year-old Ronan Kander in 2022. He was killed using a weapon that was bought online. The policing minister, Dame Diana Johnson, has just been speaking to Nick.
We've just had 30 days of being able to surrender these swords, and we know there's about 1,000 weapons that have been brought into police stations and put in surrender bins over the course of the last month. But from today, it is a criminal offence to possess, to manufacture, to import a ninja sword.
Heathrow has announced its £49 billion plan for a new runway and terminal complex. It says the third runway, which could enable another 276,000 flights every year, could be operational within a decade. The Transport Secretary, Heidi Alexander, says it's a significant step forward. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 91.32. It closed down 4 yesterday. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.15. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many places, showers developing in central and eastern areas, a high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Join EE, the UK's fastest growing broadband provider today.
Why are so many people joining?
For starters, you get up to £300 to leave your current contract.
So I can leave now with 7 months left.
Exactly. It's also got Wi-Fi control so the kids aren't glued to their devices all day.
Right. I need some of this.
Well, then join the broadband switchers choosing EE.
Verify at ee.co.uk/claims. Up to £300 credited to your EE account. New customers, 50% availability, 24 months, terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning. 8:04, Friday, August the 1st, coming up in this hour. As even from another planet, you can see how full British jails are. How do you react to the fact that nearly 7,000 people in our prisons are foreign nationals and it's costing £360 million a year? We'll look into that in more detail. We'll pick up with the conversation we had with Reform UK leader Nigel Farage on this show yesterday. Time to not stop the carnival, but move the carnival, the Notting Hill Carnival, to Hyde Park. The Notting Hill residents agree.
It's wrong, because carnival contributed for happiness for the people and for the economy for local people as well.
No, these are for the been going on for centuries. It should be here.
Across the Atlantic, and the Epstein scandal goes on. Here's President Trump responding to a question on whether the files should be released and whether his accomplice, Ghislaine Maxwell, should be pardoned.
I'm allowed to give her a pardon, but nobody's approached me with it. Nobody's asked me about it.
We'll speak with one of Ghislaine's brothers, Ian, later in this hour. And this great actor...
I looked up on the phone, do people with ADHD get into more car accidents than people who don't have it? And the answer was yes. And it's because of a lack of focus.
Well, that's Simon Pegg. Yes, let's all laugh about people getting in car accidents. That's something that's really hilarious, because often people are seriously injured or even killed. But the reason that, sadly, he's clunked his rental car in Greece and he has a rather checkered driving career, having been banned for speeding, is because he's got ADHD. No one ever has personal responsibility for anything any longer.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Don't normally start an hour like this, but we are at our best when we're at our boldest. Who famously said that? Tony Blair with his Labour government. After my conversation with the policing minister, Dame Diana Johnson, this, what is it, text has come in. And I was talking about the fact that it would be, I think, beneficial for people to see that those who are not allowed to stay in this country are being removed. John in Hartlepool, what kind of person wants to watch people being deported? That would be me, if they are, in some cases, rapists, sex offenders, or even murderers. I would be delighted to see them deported. John, You clearly not. I'll see if I can arrange for some of them to move in next door to you in Hartlepool. I'm sure that would delight the good folk of Hartlepool. Because the grim reality is, in our crowded jails, there are 6,673 convicted overseas, what are called overseas nationals, costing £360 million a year. These are figures, by the way, not from some pressure group or think tank. This is analysis by the Ministry of Justice. In total, 10,772 overseas nationals are currently locked up. Of that, 6,673 are the level of crimes I've talked about. 3,781 are being held on remand. Enough of the numbers. What of the reality? And what of what the government plans to do about it? Well, I put the question and the numbers just within the last 20 minutes or so to Policing Minister Dame Diana Johnson.
So we want to remove foreign national offenders as quickly as we can. And as you know, there are proposals to reduce the time that they have to serve before they can be removed from 50% of their sentence to 30%. Over the course of the last year, we've seen a 14% increase in the number of foreign national offenders returned. That's over 5,200. And we're also putting in special trained officers into prisons to aid the process of removing these foreign national offenders. So we're very, very well aware of what we need to do to get these people out of the country.
Let's bring in some informed comment to prompt our conversation. First up, Robert Bates, Research Director at the Centre for Migration Control think tank, joining me now. The obvious response to this would be, why don't we send them home? What is the criteria or the bar or level of crime that one has to get to before deportation be considered? Are you aware, Mr. Bates? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Thanks for having me. So at the moment, a foreign national offender can only be deported or only becomes eligible for deportation if they are given a custodial sentence of 12 months or more. That doesn't always guarantee, of course, their removal. We know that there are in communities around the country right now a further 18,000 or so foreign national offenders who actually met that threshold, but unfortunately, for whatever reason, successive governments have not been able to remove them from the country. And the figures that we saw released yesterday by the Ministry of Justice really reveal that this is a growing problem. I think there's about an 18% increase in foreign national offenders in British prisons since 2019. This is something that's clearly escalating. And you might look at the percentage and say, well, it's proportionate to foreign nationals in the population. But I think the argument would be, do we really want an immigration system that just sort of matches Britain? Surely we're meant to be letting in the best and brightest, those that are least likely to fall foul of the law and those that are actually going to help us build a better society. Unfortunately, at the moment, we don't do enough at our borders to actually make sure that the people that are coming in are those best and brightest, are those that are likely to contribute and not to fall foul of our laws. I think we need to really have a proper assessment as to whether we need to do criminal record certificate checks on all individuals coming in, not just those on certain visa routes, and whether, as I've discussed with you before, the need for a red list of nationalities and an algorithm that flags up those more likely to perhaps cause harm on the streets of Britain are also flagged. So I think there's a conversation that needs to be had. I hope these figures start that conversation.
You and your colleagues at the Centre for Migration Control did some research a couple of months ago, specifically, I understand, drilling into sexual convictions. What did you discover?
Yes, so this was on sexual assaults, which is kind of at the harder end, the tougher end of those sexual offences. And we discovered that at least a quarter of those convictions that took place last year for sexual offences were foreign nationals. And that is clearly a disproportionate rate when you consider that about 9 to 11% of the population of England and Wales are foreign nationals. Of course, within those figures as well, we also need to take for account that many foreign-born individuals have come and been given British citizenship. That's arguably a pathway that is far too easily obtained for some individuals. So there's a clear problem here, and the data does suggest that certain nationalities are disproportionately represented in these statistics. And, you know, whether it's a case of blanket bans or just using that information to at least tailor-make our immigration system, I think there's a lot more that can be done cleverly with our immigration system rather than having a one-size-fits-all approach, which we currently have.
Some would say if you are convicted of a sexual assault, a crime of that level, irrespective of whether it's 12 months, whatever it might be, if you are convicted of that crime, it should be moved that you are likely to face deportation, not worrying about term given. Would you agree?
I completely agree. And when you consider that we see roughly 35,000 convictions of foreign nationals every year, only a very small percentage of them are custodial, and an even smaller percentage of them are of the 12-month threshold. We've also got sort of suspended sentences and community orders as well. There's a lot more that can be done, and we really need to have a conversation. I think the Labour Party have at least recognised that the threshold probably is a bit arbitrary and doesn't really serve the British population. I think, especially when you look at the numbers that are being just re-released and then re-offending as well. I don't have them to hand, but I know that it's sort of, as you'd expect, those that are convicted are disproportionately likely to re-offend. So there's a whole conversation that we need to have about removing individuals, as well as making sure that we aren't letting in individuals who might be doing us harm as well.
Robert Bates is Research Director at the Centre for Migration Control think tank. Thank you for your time, 12 after 8. Listening, Mark Fairhurst, National Chair for the Prison Officers Association. Good to have you on, Mr. Fairhurst. What does it mean for the brave men and women who work under you and who are your colleagues? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. It just adds pressure to staff who work on the front line because it increases overcrowding with people who rarely, you know, they're coming into our country committing an offence, and on the whole, we don't deport them back to where they should be.
What do you think the solution might be, Mr. Fairhurst?
Well, you need an agreement with the recipient country of origin for them to be deported back to their own country. And what happens if they come in with no passport or no identification and you don't know which country they're from? That's an issue. But I think what will help, Nick, is this new review of sentencing by David Gork. If that's adopted, we could maybe start reducing the prison population. The biggest problem I've got with all this is, what do the victims of crime think? Because if I'm a foreign national criminal and I know I'm only going to serve 30% of my sentence, it's not exactly a deterrent to me, is it?
The men and women who are our prison officers are on a trial period with tasers, I understand. What is the mood among prison officers at this time? Just how much pressure is there in our jails?
Well, it's a tinderbox. We've had some concerted indiscipline incidents over the weekend. This seems to be ramping up. And this is a national pilot by two specially trained teams, one in the north, one in the south. We're hoping after a couple of months of trialling that the evidence will prove that we need to roll it out locally to specially trained officers. So it's an immediately available as a resource to deploy life-threatening incidents. And unfortunately, they're becoming more and more too common. It really is a dangerous job, Nick.
Grateful for your time as ever, Mark Fairhurst, your National Chair of the Prison Officers Association. Thank you. Isn't this easily solved? Upon conviction of a sexual crime or a violent crime, such as ABH, actual bodily harm, GBH, grievous bodily harm, or the use of a weapon, whether it be a knife or a gun, or physical assault, violent assault, I should say, violent assault, that's it. You then face deportation, irrespective of whether you get 12 months. So if you happen to be a Romanian and you go to jail for not paying your TV licence, no, you're not going to get deported for that. But come to this country, enjoy our hospitality, commit a sexual crime, beat someone up, deal in drugs, you face, obviously it has to be satisfied, but you face instant deportation. That would, at maximum, save £360 million a year. Imagine how that money could be spent. We'll take your views on that. Also coming up later in this hour, is it time to not stop the carnival, but move the Notting Hill Carnival? 8:15, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
Donald Trump has announced his latest wave of trade tariffs, including a 35% rate on Canadian goods. The Supreme Court is to rule on whether motorists could be entitled to billions of pounds in compensation over their finance agreement. Two senior American officials will visit Gaza later to inspect a food distribution site. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for most, a high of 22 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. Two lanes are closed on the M25 Dartford Tunnel due to a broken down vehicle anti-clockwise from Junction 1A for Dartford to Junction 31 for Purfleet. On the M4, one lane is closed westbound from Junction 5 for Langley to Junction 6 for Slough. That's also due to a broken down vehicle. In Neasden, there are queues on the A406 North Circular Road westbound from the M1 Junction 1 for Staples Corner to the Neasden interchange. That's in the roadworks area. There are delays in Wapping on A1203, the highway westbound before Tower Bridge, coming from the Limehouse Link Tunnel. And service is suspended on Southwestern Railway eastbound between Virginia Water and Feltham and Raysbury and Feltham. That's due to signal problems.
This is LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC. Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too. Because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-road adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge. Helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Just think of that amount of money. £360 million. Now, you're not gonna save all of it, of course you're not. But I bet you're gonna save about half. £180 million. Where would you spend that money? Think what that could do for, I don't know, giving nurses a few quid, whoever you want to give money to. But don't worry. They've actually, the Daily Express has done this in considerable detail. He said as he could hear papers rustling, so I've been a government minister, isn't it? Here we go. Breakdown of the bill for foreign prisoners shows Albanian criminals cost us the most, £64 million. Polish then in at 40. Irish nationals, 38. Lithuanians, 18.2 million. Jamaicans, 18.1 million. Indians, 17.2 million. And on and on and on and on it goes. We could spend that money elsewhere, couldn't we? 20 minutes after 8. Matthew in Newmarket. Your reaction to these figures, Matthew. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I can only say one thing. I think you covered the story a few months ago about sending people back from foreign nationals.
Mm.
Chicken nuggets.
This is the Albanian who's...
Yep.
I can't remember whether it's son or daughter, whose child didn't want to eat non-British-made chicken nuggets. Remember it's well.
They couldn't send them back. So, yeah. I hear what the ministers are saying and everything, but I don't believe it's going to happen because I think the Human Rights Act is going to go in their favour in a lot of cases.
He was a 10-year-old boy. That's right. Thank you to my colleague who got that up in world record speed. That points us to the conversation about the ECHR. Matthew, where are you on that?
I think they need to make changes to it, either defer parts of the ECHR, which a government can do, or just change it and remove it or something like that, because people are using it too much it's not set up. They're using it for what its purpose wasn't for, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
It's meant to be to stop the rise of fascism in Europe originally, and it's been misused for other people, I'm afraid. And they use this living document part of it, which we didn't need to do. We didn't actually need the ECHR when you look at it in the past.
I think in the aftermath of the Second World War, when this continent, and indeed the world, was still coming to terms with the horrors and the depravities that it had witnessed, I wasn't around. Yes, I can see and I understand why Winston Churchill was one of the prime movers and the United Kingdom was an architect. But the world has moved on since the late 40s, and unfortunately this legislation effectively hasn't, is my take on it.
Definitely.
All right, so have a good weekend, Matthew. Thank you for your view. Great points you make, 8:21. Michael in Brentwood, you're on the radio, Michael. What are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Hello, Nick. What I wanted to say is we have to help our institutions do these things. So when what I mean is, it's always so hard, the ECHR and everything else that creates problems at the business end of trying to get rid of someone. So what we need to do is, when they come in, when they're given asylum, when they're given the national papers, everything, They need to sign an agreement at that point, waiving the right to appeal if they are found guilty and they do transfer. So we have to say at that point, if you do any of these crimes, you're going back.
Still get lawyers, wouldn't they? They'd still get lawyers and they'd say, I don't know, they had ADHD, or they'd just find some sort of thing. This is the problem, isn't it, Michael?
Yes, but once you've got a legal agreement in place, you can bypass that. There will still be lawyers arguing it. Of course there will. And we need that because we need it when it's done in the right way. So you can't choose who you do the right things for. But if you've signed a legal agreement agreeing that you will waive your rights to appeal if you transgress these certain crimes and you find yourself in prison and just transferred out straight away, we should be able to enforce that in some way. But we have to help them by having at least a legal agreement in place with the participant, because that wipes off a lot of their arguments in court.
How frustrated does this get you?
Sorry?
How frustrated does this make you, these sort of...
Oh, it makes me really frustrated. And you know me, Nick, I'm much more liberal about
you
these
are.
Things.
I
really am. But this is disgusting. It's absolutely unconscionable. It's just, I hate that, you know, this makes our institutions look useless. And that brings down the whole national feeling about nothing works. Nothing works the way it should work. Nothing is processing the way it should process. And it has a knock-on effect on the whole way we feel about our country.
Michael, I couldn't have put it better myself. You just do get this sense that nothing's working. Whether it's our attempt to stop people arriving in this country, locking up foreign nationals, costing us hundreds of millions of pounds. You know that the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, says he wants to recognise the state of Palestine. Maybe he wants to recognise the state of the United Kingdom as well. That is the reality of where we find ourselves. The state of the UK is pretty, pretty clapped out. Michael, thank you for your call. Let's go to other matters. Now, around this time yesterday, you were putting your calls into the leader of Reform UK, Nigel Farage, and among many issues that we discovered, one is the world's second biggest carnival, or party of its kind, Europe's biggest. I speak of the Notting Hill Carnival. Mr. Farage had some views on that. LBC's reporter Henry Ryder was listening and decided to take himself off to the area and speak with some locals. He joins me now from Notting Hill. Henry, good morning.
Morning, Nick. You're right. The biggest carnival in Europe, and as you said, the second biggest in the world, started here in 1966. It's free to attend and will take place in just a few weeks' time on the August bank holiday weekend. Family Day is on Sunday, the 24th of this month. But the Notting Hill Carnival has been a source of controversy in recent years. Last year, no fewer than 8 people were stabbed during the event, 1 fatally, and there were 350 violent or sexual offences recorded, 75 police officers were injured, and there were doubts from organisers as to whether the event could actually go ahead this year before nearly £1 million was found by the Mayor of London, the Royal Borough of Kensington and Chelsea, as well as the City of Westminster for safety and infrastructure help. But speaking, as you mentioned, on your programme yesterday, the Reform UK leader Nigel Farage, when asked by Kel in Harrow, said the event should be moved.
With regard to crime, what are your thoughts on scrapping Notting Hill Carnival?
The Notting Hill Carnival, cost of policing last year, £11.7 million. I don't need to remind you, Mr. Farage, that we've had fatal stabbings there. Mm. We have stabbings, unfortunately, on a regular basis and assaults on police officers. Mm. Nigel Farage?
Yeah, in the last couple of years, it's been pretty much a disgrace and appalling for the residents that live there. I wouldn't stop the Notting Hill Carnival. I'd put it in Hyde Park. We've got the wonderful facility of Hyde Park, where we can actually have knife arches.
Indeed, moving the event is an idea that dates back to the 2004 Carnival Review under Ken Livingstone, and it is an expensive event. In 2023, it cost the Met Police £11.7 million. Half of that was in overtime costs. Kensington and Chelsea Council pay around £1 million in street cleaning each year. Now, as you heard then, Mr. Farage says it was appalling for locals. Organisers say the carnival has its roots here and so should remain. So I asked residents whose side they're on.
It is very noisy and there's a lot of people coming into the area which don't normally come here, and some of them do cause a bit of trouble. They like to graffiti everywhere. But personally, I love it. I've lived here for 40 years. I just love the fact that people can come along and have a great time.
Taking place later this month, what's it like as a local resident?
Once a year, it's okay. We enjoy it. But at the same time, I'm a bit frightened to be here because the stabbing going on everywhere.
Nigel Farage is saying it should be moved. to another place like Hyde Park. Do you think he's right?
No. These are for the been going on for centuries. It should be here.
You can't move it. I mean, one of the most amazing things about it is that it's a street party. It happens on the street. This doesn't happen anywhere else. Just live with it. It's an amazing thing. Celebrate it. The biggest thing London didn't do, probably about 25 years ago, was actually embrace it and promote it. It's always been looked at as a problem. It's not a problem.
I put the issue of its location to the Mayor of London yesterday, and a spokesperson told me the event was born out of the Caribbean community in North Kensington and Notting Hill. It ultimately belongs to the community who decide where it is held. And Nick, the carnival usually attracts around 2 million people. It's staffed by 40,000 volunteers, and likely this month you'll see nearly 10,000 police officers too.
Henry Riley reporting 8:27. If you're in the area, do give me a call on that. But you're calling about this record number of foreign criminals in UK jails, just under 7,000, costing £360 million a year. Lisa's in High Wycombe. Lisa, this touches you personally, I understand. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, my our daughter was raped and murdered by a foreign national back in 2019 when she was at university. And I feel really strongly that he was found guilty and sentenced to life with a minimum of 27 years.
Right.
And I feel really strongly that he should spend his sentence here, because as far as I'm aware, he doesn't have any family in this country. So, you know, I'm not able to see my daughter, and he's been taken from his family. I am a bit conflicted over it, but, you know, I feel really strongly.
And I'm terribly sorry, but what is the country of origin of the man who murdered your daughter?
He was Polish.
He was Polish. And yes. Has he sought to go back to Poland then?
Not that I'm aware. But obviously when I hear that there's a possibility of, you know, foreign nationals being deported, completely agree that when he comes out, when he finishes his sentence, he should be deported.
Right.
But I want him to be here and not have access to his family, because we don't have access to our daughter because of him.
Do you know, it's an aspect that I mercifully never considered or had to consider. Why is it important to you?
It gives me a little bit more justice, I suppose, because obviously if he was in his own country of origin and had family that could go and visit him, that would be, you know, it's almost like a benefit, isn't it, to have a family member come and visit you. As far as I'm aware, he doesn't have family here that can go and visit. So
he was 26 when he was convicted.
Yes, he was.
Of murdering your daughter.
Yes.
Do you think 27 years was a long enough term?
No, I don't. I think he should have had life, meaning life. That's on my list of things to campaign for. But he actually got 18 years for the rape and then life with a minimum of 27 for the murder.
I see. But they're served concurrently, aren't they, of course?
Of course they do. Yes.
I see.
You know, because he'll be 51 when he's eligible for parole, so he can have a life. You know, I'm 55 now and I'm having a life. And as much as I can. But, you know, he will have opportunities to live a life. Libby doesn't get that opportunity.
Lisa, thank you. A desperately difficult conversation. You have actually switched on a light in my head that I hadn't thought of. And while a lot of people would say the question, I fully understand how you feel the way you do about that Polish national. Thank you for putting your point so eloquently. It's 8:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. We will return to this conversation, but it's time for the headlines. Thomas Watts.
Donald Trump has announced new tariff rates on dozens of US trading partners after weeks of negotiations. Prime Minister Mark Carney says his government is disappointed at the decision to raise the rate on Canada to 35%. The Supreme Court is set to deliver a landmark decision on car finance compensation. It will decide whether or not to uphold an earlier judgment on the secret commission paid to car dealers. The policing minister, Dame Diana Johnson, has told Nick that foreign offenders are being removed from British jails as quickly as possible. New figures show people born overseas account for 1 in 8 inmates in England and Wales. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many, some showers in central and eastern parts of England, a high of 22 degrees.
This is LBC.
Searching for a holiday? Here's an idea. Don't type cheap flights to wherever into your browser. You know you do it. Search Kayak instead. Let us do the finding for you. All the great flight deals from hundreds of travel sites, all in one place.
Go on, do it, do it! Listen to the waves, they're calling your name. Not literally, obviously, unless your name is... Kayak. Kayak! You're thinking about it, aren't you? Search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You've got it. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Society's rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
With UK Export Finance, I'm fulfilling more export orders from around the world with working capital support.
Export insurance means I'll get paid when exporting to challenging markets.
At UK Export Finance, we believe no viable UK export should fail for lack of finance or insurance. Between 2023 and 2024, we provided £8.8 billion of government-backed trade finance to support UK exports. Learn how we could help you win export contracts, fulfil orders and get paid. Search UK Export Finance today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33, and we'll return to our conversation concerning the cost of foreign criminals, although taking on board, of course, what Lisa has just told us. As the mother of a young girl who was raped and murdered by a Polish national, she, the mum, is delighted that the Pole is having to spend his 27-year minimum term in this country, because it stops families. And I understand that. That was spoken from the heart, wasn't it? From that mum. We'll return to that conversation in a moment. Now to another area that always prompts a reaction. Special education needs and disabilities. And one political party, the Liberal Democrats, are speaking of an absolute scandal of profiteering in this field. Here with more details, and I think with an action plan as well, if I know her, is the Liberal Democrat MP for Twickenham and the education spokesperson, Munira Wilson. Good to have you on, Munira Wilson. Let's go right at the start. What is it that you and your colleagues have uncovered or want to highlight?
Well, the Liberal Democrats today are calling for an end to this scandalous profiteering of private equity-run and foreign sovereign wealth fund special schools across the country, which frankly are profiteering up to the tune of 20% profit margins, tens of millions of pounds off the backs of vulnerable disabled children and those with special educational needs, at the same time as pushing our councils to the brink of bankruptcy. So we're suggesting that there should be a profit cap of 8% put in place on all private special schools so that we can start to tackle the crisis in our SEND system.
So what does a private school provide then? Is it literally transportation for the child, full education for the child? What might it mean, Munira?
No, transport is often separate, and that's also costing councils hundreds of millions of pounds as well. And it's actually part and parcel of the same problem. The problem we have is we have a broken market. We don't have enough specialist provision close to where the children are living, and we don't have enough state-run specialist provision. So lots of private providers have moved into that gap, and some of them, as I say, are private equity companies, foreign-owned sovereign wealth funds. I mean, one company last year made something like a £40 million profit from these schools. I mean, it's an absolute
This is reportedly
outrage.
The Witherslack Group, operating 28 schools, turned over just over £200 million a year, and it is reported £44 million of which was profit, which is more than 20% profit.
That's right. Absolutely.
If you cut it to 8%, though, on this, why would they continue to run these schools? They might just say, we'll do something else, thank you.
Well, obviously, Nick, that is a risk, and that's why we're not proposing this in isolation. There are already 66 special schools that are in the pipeline to be built. Unfortunately, the previous Conservative government was pretty slow at delivering them. We're calling on this government to deliver them quickly. The previous government also stopped local authorities opening their own special schools. And the other thing we've got, Nick, particularly in London, the South East, but also in other parts of the country, is we've got falling school rolls with a falling birth rate. So actually lots of schools have got lots of space opening up within them. In central London, we've even seen whole schools close down. So a quicker and cheaper way to deliver specialist provision that is state funded, which is often a fraction of what the private special schools are charging, would be to put specialist units into those existing schools where space is opening up.
But I've known you for a while. You're a reasonable person. Do you really think it's the role of government, of whatever political shade, to decide how much profit private companies can make? It's a pretty nasty feeling. feeling around that one,
well,
Manira Wilson?
Well, Nick, look, as a Liberal, it doesn't sit overly comfortably with me. Look, I believe in a free market, but that must have some rules around it. And actually, this is not a new concept. I work in, before I became an MP, I worked for a decade in the life sciences industry. And in the pharmaceuticals industry, for many, many years, governments of all colours have imposed a profit cap so that the NHS gets a good deal from the drugs that those pharmaceutical companies are selling them. And we, Liberal Democrats, are proposing a similar sort of approach to these special schools. And interestingly, Nick, this Labour government has already proposed a similar provision for private equity-run children's homes. Many of them are run by the same companies we're talking about here today. And in that legislation, I just said, well, why, if you're doing it for children's care homes, let's do it for special schools. Well, I'm afraid Keir Starmer ordered his Labour MPs in March of this year to vote against that. And I'm afraid the Conservatives didn't even bother turning up for the vote.
Let's broaden the conversation out as we come to the end of our time together. How adequate, good or otherwise is provision of SEND in this country in your view?
Well, I think it was Gillian Keegan, the Conservative, former Conservative Education Secretary, who said it was lose, lose, lose. It's broken. It desperately needs reform. And so we recognise the government needs to do that. But they mustn't start by rolling back rights and starting from a cost-cutting perspective in the way that they did with welfare reform. They need to make sure that we've got the right provision in place for children, starting with early identification and intervention, right the way through to the specialist provision we're talking about today.
And isn't that one of the problems? Whenever I discuss this, Manira, people call, often it's the mum, sometimes it's the dad, and they talk about how long, and in some cases how expensive it has been to get the necessary paperwork or whatever it is for their child to be recognised.
100%. I and MPs up and down the country get countless cases coming into our inboxes, into our surgeries, of families fighting tooth and nail every day to get the support their children need and deserve. And that's why we need to crack down on those firms that are really scandalously taking advantage of the gap we have in provision, and make sure that the government works not just with local authorities but with other providers to make sure that we fill that gap in a way that doesn't allow these vulture firms to feed off and profiteer in the way that they are.
And lastly, to come full circle then, Manira, I hear what you say, but if this measure actually scares some companies off, and you have the argument that, you know, 44% is a very healthy problem, if you're scared, you're going to do even more damage to the provision of these places, aren't you?
Well, it'll have to happen in a stepwise way, in the same way the government's proposing with children's care homes. They're going to put financial regulations in place, and if that doesn't work, they are giving themselves the power to profit cap. I'm saying they need to take the same approach with these schools as well, and in the meantime, get on with building that state-run special school provision, whether it's whole schools or specialist units in empty classrooms that are opening up all over the place.
Grateful for your time. Thank you. Manira Wilson, Liberal Democrat Education Spokesperson. If you've had those problems with SEND, remember getting, I'm going to call it the certification, the registration, whatever it might be, do give me a call. It is a desperately, desperately troubling and troublesome field. Right, let's come to your calls. You've been hanging on the line to talk about foreign criminals. £360 million. You're not going to get rid of it all, but you could get rid of a chunk. Imagine how many SEND places that would provide. Keith's in Banbury. Keith, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi there, Nick. I started ringing. I could talk all morning about this issue, but I don't come from London. Right. I think me and you, you're a bit older than me, but my first girlfriend came from Edmonton.
Oh, right.
And she took me down to London loads of times.
What was her name?
Sharon.
Whatever happened to Sharon from Edmonton? If you're listening now, give me a call.
She probably isn't listening now, but okay. I remember that first time she moved up to Oxfordshire. She took me down to London, and I loved it. It was fantastic. We went all those places I never really knew, Covent Garden and everything else.
Right.
And I've been down to London since. And obviously, it's a completely different city now. It's a completely different feel. My neighbour two doors down, a guy called Rick, he's a Cockney. He never goes back down to London now. He says it's changed beyond me. I mean, for me, the real... When I came to London the last couple of times, I was on Westminster Bridge, and there's loads of things I saw, but I couldn't believe, under the nose of the Westminster, and in eyesight of New Scotland Yard, further down the river, there are those Albanian and Romanian scamming gangs on that bridge. That for me did it for London. That taught me everything I needed to know, that the government
don't give two hoot, really.
It's like the wild... I mean, they appear to be Albanian or Romanian. They certainly appear to be of Eastern European. We can't actually, but yes, it is well known. And a lot of the crimes that have caused... A lot of the people who are arrested for crimes are of that descent. And there's all the different games, aren't there? There's the Cups game and everything else that's being played there. But don't worry, the commissioner can probably look out of his window and have a direct eye, have it in his direct eye line.
I know. It's shocking, really. So I think Trump talking about our border, absolutely he's right to say that. I mean, two quick things before I finish. I don't really want to... I've just written to my MP, Banbury MP, this week about Banbury and the way Banbury's changed in the last 30, 40 years. Mm. It started with Tony Blair and his sidekick, Barbara Roach. I think she was the lady that did all the... was his kind of lady that dealt with lots of immigration.
She was the immigration minister of some time.
That's exactly right. And yeah. I think she led the chant, obviously, with the Eastern Europe and... And then, of course, the Tories made
it. Well, never forget the Blair aide who said they wanted to rub the nose of the right in it. And that was the right wing, of course. And that was why in some parts they opened the floodgates. And, of course, do you remember them telling that they would come in small numbers? And they stuck counting when it's 500,000. It was, unfortunately, part of the problem that we see now. Keith, thank you for your input. Whatever happened to Sharon? Give us a call if you're listening. Brian's in Rayleigh. You're on the radio, Brian. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, the whole thing's got out of hand. I don't know if you want to see what's going on, have a look at Crime Stoppers. These are the people they haven't caught. And about 70, I'd say 70%, I'm not exaggerating, maybe more, of the wanted are foreign criminals. It's just...
I mean, I haven't seen Crime Stoppers. I would be surprised if it's that high a percentage.
It is. Nick, I assure you, I've counted the numbers. I'm looking at it now. They've got the lines of four people. The one I'm looking at now, they're all foreign criminals, all four.
All right, OK. Well, I'm sure if we scroll further down or turn to the next page or whatever, there'll be plenty of domestic-born criminals. What is the action that needs to be taken, Brian?
I think we've got to close the borders, to be honest.
No, that doesn't
what's happening in Hungary now. They've just stopped they've stopped all entry.
You don't want to be like Hungary. That's a very repressive...
Oh, we don't want to be like we are as well. I mean, it's got out of hand. I mean, the number of people...
Yeah, where you are right is that we are in a pretty poor place in that one person arrives every 12 minutes. We've now hit that record of 25,000. That was what we talked about in the first hour. Brian, we now hear that we've got nearly 7,000 overseas prisoners costing us £360 million, I agree. But and as I said earlier, so much for Sir Keir Starmer wanting to recognise the state of Palestine. Perhaps he'd like to recognise the state of the United Kingdom, the country which he has overall responsibility. But don't let's run away with the whole idea that we're going to close the borders. That takes nobody anywhere, really, Brian, in all honesty. Let's feature some of the social media that's coming in. We talked in the previous hour about that problem with people arriving and the government promise that 35,000 people are being deported. Margaret asks a fair question. How many of those 35,000 have crossed the channel? I'm not interested in those people who've just overstayed their visas. We are being gaslit. Same subject. This comes in from John. It's quite simple. We need a government that's prepared to take action and not always court popularity. Margaret Thatcher once said, it's not what we say, it's what we do. We need to go back to those days. Keep them coming. And coming up after the news, very much in at the headlines, the other side of the Atlantic in the United States, the fate of the so-called Epstein files. We'll be speaking with the brother of Ghislaine Maxwell after the news. 8:45 LBC News Headlines, Thomas Watts.
Donald Trump has unveiled the next step of his tariff war against dozens of US trading partners. A landmark ruling will be made by the Supreme Court this afternoon on car finance compensation. And a US special envoy is due to inspect an aid distribution site in Gaza. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many, a high of 22 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. On the M20, an entry slip road is closed westbound at Junction 8 for Maidstone services with delays to Leeds Castle. That's because of an accident. Things are slow on the M4 onto the elevated section eastbound from Junction 3 for Hayes to Junction 2 for Brentford. In Neasden, there are queues on the A406 North Circular Road westbound from the M1 Junction 1 for Staples Corner to the Neasden interchange. That's in the roadworks area. The A40 in Hillingdon is partially blocked eastbound due to an accident before Hillingdon Circus, with delays to Junction 1 for Denham. And service is suspended on Southwestern Railway eastbound between Virginia Water and Feltham and Raysbury and Feltham. That's due to signal problems.
This is LBC.
With Lidl Plus Bakery Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free Lidl Bakery coupon on every shop. Download Lidl Plus and get at the Retail Industry Awards Supermarket of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability, ends 20th of August. Full T's and C's apply. See lidl.co.uk/spin.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
For a whole year, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
Okay, train from London to peaceful Peterborough.
Neem Park this way, huh?
Gorgeous. Wow. Never thought I'd be this into bird watching.
Did you see it? Lovely plumage.
Train home. Brilliant day. Oh, gotta rent bikes next time to see the big lake. And more birds, obviously.
Download the Thameslink Railway app and save with advanced tickets. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Pump six in this meal deal, please.
Let's play Rate My BP Meal Deal.
Okay.
You chose an M&S chicken and bacon pasta, Magnum ice cream and a Wild Bean Cafe iced latte. That's a 10. A perfect warm weather combo.
Ever on a holiday?
No. BP Meal Deal. One deal, millions of combinations. All for £6. T's and C's apply, subject to availability at BP M&S stores only. For details, see bp.com/latest offers.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:49 is the time. We'll be speaking more about this government pledge and promise, and they say they've delivered on cutting knife crime. I have to say, sitting in London covering the news, it doesn't actually feel like it, but that's in the next hour. Now, making headlines in the United States is, of course, President Donald Trump and his tariffs, but there are other conversations to be had, not least, of course, over the Epstein files. Will they be released? Exactly what might it mean? And in that connection, let's bring into the conversation Ian Maxwell, the brother of Ghislaine Maxwell, of course, is currently serving a jail conviction there, although the family say it is a miscarriage of justice. Ian Maxwell, thank you for coming on the show. Your sister met last month with the Deputy United States Attorney General, Todd Blanche. What came of those conversations, Mr. Maxwell? Good morning.
Morning to you. Well, we're waiting to hear what the DOJ has to say about it. Mr. Blanche said that he would be releasing a statement about it in due course, and we're still waiting on that. Gillen's lawyer, David Marcus, confirmed that she had answered questions over 2 days, answered everything truthfully, and we're waiting really for the outcome of that.
What was the line of questioning?
We don't know. Apparently, Mr. Marcus, on behalf of Gillen, said she'd been asked questions about perhaps 100 people or so. That much he spoke about when he gave a small press conference after the talks were over. But other than that, we do not know.
Do you believe the so-called files should be released? And if so, why?
I believe that transparency is generally the right way to go. And I believe transparency is the friend of my sister. So I do think that to the extent some of these files or whatever they amount to can be released, that's a good thing.
That's your belief. You're probably aware that the family of one of Epstein's victims has asked Donald Trump, not to consider pardoning your sister. The family member of the late Virginia Giuffre saying Ghislaine Maxwell is a monster who deserves to rot in prison for the rest of her life. As her brother, how do you respond?
Well, I think I know who the monster is here. It certainly isn't my sister. Virginia Giuffre was a consummate liar from start to finish. And this is most conspicuously revealed when she had alleged that she had slept with Professor Alan Dershowitz, maintained it for many years, and then had to withdraw and desist. That's the first major point. And perhaps the second and crucial point is that the law enforcement elected not to call Virginia Giuffre to the trial of my sister, the most voluble, perhaps best known of her accusers. And why was that? Because she would have been eviscerated by the defense. So that's my take on her.
What is the physical condition of your sister at this time, Mr. Maxwell?
Well, she's now completed 5 years of prison, 2 years of that pre-trial in absolutely torturous circumstances at MDC Brooklyn, one of the toughest jails in the world, really, not just in the U.S. She's now at Tallahassee, which is a pretty violent place, awash with drugs, desperately overcrowded. And, you know, it's a dangerous place. Prisons are dangerous places. So I am fearful for my sister, but her spirit is strong. Her belief in her innocence, and my belief in that too, is resolute.
How likely is it your sister will go before the U.S. lawmakers later this month?
Well, it's a subpoena, so that she's compelled to go. But the her lawyer has written to Congress to say that she would like to testify, but that has to be in a safe and appropriate way. She is engaged in ongoing live legal proceedings, both at the Supreme Court of the United States, which we know just yesterday has confirmed that it will be considering her petition after the summer recess starting September 29th, so just 6 weeks after the date that the Congress has summoned her. But in order for her to be able to testify, she has requested perfectly reasonably in lawyer's view, and of course in the family's view, that she receive immunity for doing so, that because she's already been in jail for 5 years, it is pointless seeking to do a cat-and-mouse game with her. If they really want proper testimony, they should provide her with the questions in advance so that she can prepare adequately, including being able to corroborate what she says. There are other conditions, including that the interview would not take place in Tallahassee Prison, which is a dangerous, leaky, inappropriate place for that sort of testimony.
From your knowledge, did President Trump ever go to Epstein's Island?
I don't know. I do not know that he ever did.
Did you meet with Epstein?
Yes, I did.
What did you make of him, Mr. Maxwell?
I thought he was a highly intelligent man. He had a sort of dark charisma about him. He was a very aggressive listener. You felt that he was taking things from you, taking information from you. I didn't warm to him, I have to say. He's not a man that I would have wanted to go for a drink with, if you see what I mean. But this was a relatively short time, or maybe an hour or two, something like 25 years ago. That was the only time.
Lastly, how likely do you think it is your sister will be released during President Trump's term in office?
Well, obviously, we hope that will happen. She has, as I said, a live a petition to the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court decide that they aren't going to hear that and then grant her appeal, that's the end of the process, because the basis of her petition is that she should never have been put on trial, let alone convicted. So that's a shutout. Then if that doesn't run, she is going to run a whole series of putting before the court a new set of evidence, right, which goes straight to the heart of why she did not get a fair trial, and there would she be seeking a declaration of a mistrial.
All right.
So I think that on the legal front, there's a very good chance. And then, of course, there's pardon, commutation, all kinds of things could happen.
Right.
I'm hopeful.
Let me finish. While I'm grateful for your time, a lot of my listeners are sending me notes. They think it's a pretty low blow to slander someone who's dead and not here to respond, Virginia Giuffre. How would you defend that action, Mr. Maxwell?
Mike, this has been banged up for 5 years. It is very, very largely due to the actions, lies of this woman who has destroyed my sister's life and other lives with her lies, including that of Prince Andrew and other young women whom she recruited for Epstein. I shed no tear for Virginia Giuffre.
I'm grateful for your time. Ian Maxwell, you're the brother of Ghislaine Maxwell, who, as we said earlier, could be now subpoenaed to give that evidence in August, and we will obviously follow that story, representing a lot of your anger with, as you rightly say, a woman who's not here to defend herself. Right, we've got a minute to go to the news. Let's fill in with some of the emails and texts that have been coming in on a wide range of stories. We'll start with the one that we were just covering, which is the provision of jail places. Paul in Kingston, foreign nationals locked up, dropping the ocean to the ones who aren't locked up. We need to have tougher sentencing. Another one comes in here. Terry in Manchester, what a terrible suggestion that we go after all of these people. Some of them are in there unfairly, and their cases need to be heard. We also talked about SEND, special educational needs and disabilities. Kelly's in Birmingham. Kelly, what point do you want to make to that? Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, Kelly, your story.
Morning, sorry, I'm super nervous. So just super quickly,
yes.
We've come out of a 2-year EHCP process. So I did the first year on my own, and then the second year I had struck a solicitor.
Yep.
We've just come to the end of it, but I was listening with great interest from the Liberal Democrat MP, because she was saying that private SEND school placements are overcharging for children's placements. We've just come out about a month ago from gaining a local authority school placement, which should have cost around £20,000 for our child to be placed there.
Right.
The school was oversubscribed by about 10 to 15 pupils, and they demanded from the local authority, they put 3 payments options forward, ranging from £40,000 to £60,000 to £80,000 for our child to be placed there.
Good grief.
And that's a local authority school.
So what's been the end result then, Kelly?
Obviously, for disclosure, we don't know how much it's cost, but it's a minimum of £40,000, a replacement that should have cost £20,000, from a local authority-funded school. So it's not only the private schools that are profiteering, but it's also local authorities too. And I just thought, I wanted to put that point across to the minister, if she's looking into these things.
So that's the profiteering that could be going on, is the thing, case you want to make, isn't it, Kelly?
Yeah, with not only private companies, but local authorities as well.
Well done with what you've achieved. Thank you. I know that they do, people who act for the ministers do listen to this show, so that note will probably be passed across. Kelly, have a good weekend. Thank you. Coming up after news, we speak about a different minister, policing minister Dame Diana Johnson, talking about the crackdown on knife-enabled crime.
And it's introduced today. We've just had 30 days of being able to surrender these swords, and we know there's about 1,000 weapons that have been brought into police stations and put in surrender bins over the course of the last month.
So the government says that knife crime is going down, but I'll be asking, it certainly doesn't feel like it here in London. Does it feel like it where you live? Plus, top actor Simon Pegg says he's a bad driver and recently crashed his rental car in Greece because he has ADHD. Does that rhyme with you? Those stories and more after the 9 o'clock news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Donald Trump has unveiled the next step of his tariff war against dozens of US trading partners. New tax rates of up to 41% will apply to countries that haven't been able to strike trade agreements with the US. They will take effect in a week. But Canada is facing an immediate hike to 35%. Millions of motorists could be in line for compensation, depending on the outcome of a Supreme Court ruling later. It will decide whether or not to uphold a judgment on secret finance commission paid to car dealers. A ruling is due later in the afternoon. Christian May from City AM has told Nick it could have huge implications for lenders.
This is one of the most consequential and ongoing financial, regulatory, legal battles that the city has ever seen. It is up there with PPI mis-selling scandal, if you remember that. And there are concerns that if this goes all the way, it could have a dramatic effect. I mean, Lloyds, I think, is on the hook. They've set aside nearly £500 million to cover compensation claimants.
A Home Office minister has told Nick that foreign offenders are being removed from British jails as quickly as possible. New figures show people born overseas account for 1 in 8 inmates in England and Wales prisons. That's the highest level since 2013. Dame Diana Johnson says the government is very well aware of what needs to be done.
There are proposals to reduce the time that they have to serve before they can be removed from 50% of their sentence to 30%. Over the course of the last year, we've seen a 14% increase in the number of foreign national offenders returned. That's over 5,200.
Two senior American officials will visit Gaza later to inspect a food distribution site. They include Donald Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff. He held talks with the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, yesterday. The brother of Glenn Maxwell has backed calls for the Epstein files to be released.
I believe that transparency is generally the right way to go. And I believe transparency is the friend of my sister. So I do think that to the extent some of these files or whatever they amount to can be released, that's a good thing.
Ian Maxwell's sister is serving a 20-year jail sentence for helping the late financier Jeffrey Epstein abuse his victims. Ghislaine Maxwell's been subpoenaed to testify before Congress as Donald Trump comes under growing pressure over the case. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago reopened at 91.32. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 15. LBC weather dry with sunny spells for many. Showers developing across central and eastern England. A high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence. That's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning to you, 4 minutes after nine, Friday, August the 1st. Extra officers on the beat have helped cut what's called knife-enabled robberies and crime by 25%, the government has stated. What's not to like? Congratulations, fantastic. But hang on a second, it just doesn't feel like it in London, where I both live and work. Does it feel like it where you live or where you work? We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, we will get to that story that apparently if you have ADHD, it makes you a bad driver. So says actor Simon Pegg. Is that right? And as I've said already, it's Car Compo Day.
It's hugely significant for normal people who buy cars in this way. And this has ramifications to a whole host of other areas of economic life.
So that's group litigation specialist Damon Parker. 23 million of us could be in line for payments up to a total of £30 billion. How does that work? All a landmark ruling due around 4:30 this afternoon. Are you involved? If you are, how do you get your cash? How long do you have to wait? We'll have the who, what, where, when, why, how of that argument later in the hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Who, what, where, when, why, how. Remember that. If you've got those six facts, you can write any story on the planet. Who, what, where, when, why, how. Such as, where are the seven areas the pilot scheme has helped cut knife-enabled crime, as it's called, but that's another time. Now, we'll look at that aspect, because I will ask you, as the government says, and this is great news, and we have, it just doesn't feel like it, but I'm absolutely going to take it, that extra officers on the beat have helped cut knife-enabled robberies or crime by 25% in seven key areas, or seven key forces, we should really say, because the BTP, British Transport Police, obviously isn't as an area as such. It really does. I'll share with you the figures in London in just a moment. But as part of this conversation, the government also bringing in what's called Ronan's Law, introduced after Ronan Kander, who was 16, was murdered with a ninja sword that had been bought online. This happened in Wolverhampton in June 2022. LBC's Midlands reporter Luke Shanahan retraces his final steps.
Ronan was stabbed in a case of mistaken identity while walking home, and the law named after him is a ban on ninja swords, like the one that killed him. But it's also increasing minimum sentences for repeat knife offenders under 21, reforming education in schools, and his family and friends have called it a perfect legacy, including Joe Millington, who, speaking for the first time since Ronan's death, met me to retrace the route that his friend took that night.
That's like the only way that I can put it is these are the last steps that one of my closest mates took before he was killed.
So we get to the end of this street, he would have turned leftwards, yeah, and back towards home.
Yeah, they followed it round. We were speaking to Ronan's parents about it, Ronan's mum and sister about it the other day, and they said he was watching an anime programme on his phone. He had his headphones on, so he was in a completely different world. He wasn't thinking of what's going on right now, it was more what's going on my phone kind of thing.
Well, in his head, he'll have just been about to get home, get inside.
A few steps from his house. Even. Last thing you think is there's going to be a knife plunged into the back of you.
So, Joe, Beach Avenue, that's where the car was waiting.
Yeah, so this is where they were parked. Ronan would have literally walked past the car here. So, they were parked there, waiting. He walked past the car, took another few more steps while they'd have been sorting out the weapons, and then they charged him. It was about here that Ronan got stabbed. He dropped on the floor to stab him again. He got up as they ran off and carried on running. Tried to get to his house and then he died on the floor in that road there.
So he got up and tried to make it home?
Yeah, he carried on going. He tried to, when your house is that close, obviously you think your house is your safe place, you want to get there. But yeah, he got up and he kept going. And it was literally in the road here where he dropped for the last time.
Joe and Ronan's family hope that his law and his legacy can protect others from suffering the same fate he did.
Yeah, now Luke Shanahan reporting, as I mentioned, these ninja swords are banned as of today. And in the first hour of the show, we discussed that with the policing minister, Dame Diana Johnson. But we also started off by discussing this idea of how extra officers have cut knife-enabled crime.
So when we came into power, there had been a 14% increase in knife robbery in the previous year. The Home Secretary set up a task force in the seven police force areas where the knife crime is concentrated. And what we're really pleased to see is a reduction of 6% in those seven areas overall, which is very positive. Obviously, there is much more to do. And what's been really interesting is learning from some of the good examples, particularly the West Midlands, who've seen a 25% decrease in knife robbery. What they've been using, drones, dogs, unpredictable patrolling, using various methods, and we think that's really important that all police forces that are facing knife crime problems are using those same methods. And in London particularly, there's been lots of work around schools and making sure that young people on their way to or from school have got the protection they need, because often young people have mobile phones stolen from them with the threat of a knife.
Dame Diana, what is unpredictable patrolling?
Well, it's when you're not patrolling at the same time every day and you come for 20 minutes. There's something called hotspot patrolling where you come for a certain amount of time, quite a short period of time, and then it's unpredictable about when you'll next be there, to provide that level of uncertainty perhaps to those people who want to do us harm. There's also this summer an initiative around our neighbourhood policing guarantee, where you'll know we've agreed there'll be 13,000 additional police in our communities. is. This year, by the end of March, we'll see 3,000 of that 13,000. And this summer, we're having a real concentration in town centres with police, with local council enforcement officers, with local authorities, to really bear down on some of the crime we see in our town centres, antisocial behaviour, theft from shops, things like that, which are so important to local communities, that there is action being taken and a police presence.
You mentioned drones. How are they deployed?
Well, the West Midlands particularly use drones, and that's about obtaining information about what's going on in a local area. I mean, drones is an emerging technology that I'm very keen that police forces make more use of. You know, in the past, we've had helicopters. Obviously, we only have a limited number of helicopters, but drone technology is something that's really now coming into its own, along with things like live facial recognition. Again, a technology that I want police to be investing in.
There are concerns, civil liberty concerns, about the increase of facial recognition. Minister, you'll be aware that the Met is under a degree of challenge over that. You're completely relaxed about that aspect of the conversation?
Well, I fully recognise those concerns that people have, and what I want to ensure is that policing have very clear guidelines, code, about how they deploy live facial recognition, that the algorithms they use are not going to in any way be disproportionate in the people that they pick up. We know that there's been racial disparity in the past. That's being looked at and worked on. So I want policing to feel confident about the use of live facial recognition, but also for the communities to feel confident. And when I was in Croydon last year, I saw one of these deployments, and I had members of the community coming up to me and saying, we want more of this. We want this to be something that happens so we feel safe in our local areas. So I think, you know, there are different views on this, but I think it's a technology that the Prime Minister has been keen to say we need to make better use of.
Well, this is obviously good news. Congratulations to you, but I'm sure you'd want to say congratulations to the men and women who are actually out on
absolutely
the beat doing it. But
absolutely.
So what are the seven areas then, geographical areas?
So the West Midlands, and can I just do a shout out really to the Chief Constable in the West Midlands,
yeah,
Craig Guildford, because he's been leading from the top to make sure that this is really had the focus that it needs.
Oh,
in terms
he's
of
joining me on the show next week, I've just been told in my ear, if you'll understand the expression.
Well,
so I look forward to hearing with I look forward to speaking with the Chief Constable, so thank you. He's here, by the way, for my listeners' benefit, this clearly great Chief Constable is here taking your calls next week. Apologies, Dame Diana, but I'm going to use that ad if I may.
He is really excellent and one to be commended. Greater Manchester, now they've not seen such a dramatic fall, and we're wanting to work more with them.
Yep.
We've got the Metropolitan Police, obviously,
yep,
because there is a lot of knife crime in London. We've also got Avon and Somerset,
yep,
in our list. How many have I got up to there?
You've got four, so
four.
I'm sure you know them off the top of your head.
I do, yes. The West Midlands, Greater,
yep,
Manchester, Avon and Somerset, the Met. Now you'll have to forgive me. It's very early in the morning, but I do know them.
I can hear paper rustling. Minister.
Yes, because I've got it in front of me with the actual
you
reductions.
You don't think that perhaps you should know this, Minister?
No, I do know. Sorry, it's just very early in the morning.
Right,
sorry.
Yes, I've been aware of that for 22 years.
Right, West Midlands. Oh, British Transport Police. We mustn't forget them because
BTP.
they've also had a role.
I think you need to go to Yorkshire as the other area, isn't
and
it?
West Yorkshire, of course. Yeah,
yeah. And one more.
West Yorkshire.
One more. Stay in Yorkshire.
Well, it's not Humberside and it's not North Yorkshire.
So where else
it must be South Yorkshire.
There you go.
Yeah. Thank you.
Do you think perhaps you might have known that, Minister?
I'm sorry. Mm. I'm sorry. There's a lot going on in my head. But yeah,
okay. All right. There's a lot going on in the field of beating crime as well. Ronan's Law,
yes,
I think, comes in as of today, Minister.
It does. And that, can I just again pay tribute to Pooja Kanda, who...
Yeah, just remind everybody who Pooja is, of course.
So she tragically lost her son, Ronan. The person who killed her son, the two individuals, they had a ninja sword that they'd been able to buy online. Tragically killed Ronan. And Pooja and her family have campaigned to see this ban on these swords. And today we're introducing that ban. It was something we promised last year in our manifesto. and it's introduced today. We've just had 30 days of being able to surrender these swords, and we know there's about 1,000 weapons that have been brought into police stations and put in surrender bins over the course of the last month. But from today, it is a criminal offence to possess, to manufacture, to import a ninja sword. And it's part of a package of measures. It's not the only thing we're going to do. We've got various other measures, including putting fines on tech executives who allow content to be put on websites, glorifying weapons or selling knives in a way that's glorifying violence. We're also introducing stronger age verification checks, making clear that who orders a knife has to be over 18 and it has to be delivered to that person. Okay. So there are various other measures we're introducing through the Crime and Policing Bill.
So that's the policing minister. We decided to play you that in quite considerable length because, and I'm not disputing the figures, and it is fantastic news, but why doesn't it feel like it here in London? Last month, a man fatally stabbed for his Rolex watch. This week, I don't think there's any charges, so I'm going to go on, two men fatally stabbed in some kind of altercation. A man who owned a building company and his son fatally stabbed, two others injured in that stabbing in the Bermondsey area. Those are the figures, but what do you sense is the reality? And even as we speak, I've got a colleague trying to buy it. He won't actually buy it, it's just researching. Do you think the restrictions work during Ninja, this clampdown on Ninja knives, or is my colleague going to report the other side of the news? Nick, where do you want it delivered? What do you think? Plus, coming up later in the show, it's Friday, so we know that you... Working 9 to 5. Be working from 9 to 5 because research shows if you WFH work from home, you'll clock off at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Many of you won't even clock on, I imagine. The 9:15 LBC News headlines are next with Thomas Watts.
Donald Trump has announced new tariff rates on US trading partners after weeks of negotiations. The Supreme Court is set to deliver a landmark decision on car finance compensation. And the policing minister, Dame Diana Johnson, has told Nick that foreign offenders are being removed from British jails as quickly as possible. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many, a high of 22 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. In Bromley, the A222 Bromley Road is blocked in both directions due to a vehicle striking a railway bridge between Beckenham Lane and Shortland Station. The A23 Thornton Road and Thornton Heath is partially blocked both ways due to an accident at Shamrock Road, although traffic is moving okay. In Acton, the A4020 High Street is partially blocked because of an accident. That's between Uxbridge Road and Market Place with queues back to Gunnersbury Lane. Things are slow on the M4 onto the elevated section eastbound from Junction 3 for Hayes to Junction 2 for Brentford, and there are delays of up to an hour on Southwestern Railway eastbound between Virginia Water and Feltham and Raysbury and Feltham. That's due to signal problems.
This is LBC.
This is Go.Compare FM reporting from Savvy Street, where mysterious moustaches are appearing on residents' faces. So, your tash, where did it come from?
I was sorting out my car insurance at Go.Compare and it appeared out of nowhere.
Madam, your moustache is magnificent.
I packed a great deal on home insurance and this Savvy Tash grill on me.
And Resident Cat, your whiskers have gone from meh to marvellous. How? Could have explained your pet insurance deal better myself. Britain, get in on the tash action. Be savvy. Fill the deal at
Go.Compare.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
All those glasses are a great choice. And now you can pick a free pair from our Boots range.
Free?
That's right.
What, free?
Absolutely. There's hundreds to choose from, too.
For free? Does the manager know?
I am the manager.
Oh, in that case, how do these look?
With buy one, get one free at Boots Opticians, everyone can save in style. Book an eye test today and see what's possible. Free Boots pair when you spend £150 on prescription glasses or sunglasses. Offer ends 23rd of September 2025. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Report from the newsroom. My colleague, who's not particularly swift at anything, has said that he was able to easy, hasn't bought it, but he's easily bought a samurai sword. Now, if Freddie can do it, anybody can do it. And Kimberly in Tunbridge Wells, I think you've done it, have you, Kimberly? Is that right? Good morning.
Yes, hi. Yep, hi there. Yeah, just listening to your guest talking about how Ronan's Law's coming in. And I just went to Amazon, logged on, bought it, can be delivered tomorrow to my house.
Isn't that incredible? And this is meant to have come. So what does this tell you? See, I don't, and again, the reason we played Dame Diana out in full, I wanted to say everyone, but I'm sure that it just doesn't feel like it, does it? It doesn't feel like we're tackling knife crime, Kimberly.
No, there's young people everywhere, young men, especially in London. You know, I see it for my son. My son's 14. You know, he likes to go fishing, and I'm worried that it's just hanging about where there's people, just the wrong type of people. And you know that rather than carrying perhaps, you know, a heavy fist, they've got a knife with them now.
So, sorry, does your son live or work in town in London then?
No, no, he's only 14.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He's just started. Mm. He just likes to go fishing. He likes to go to these remote lakes and places. Mm. And I won't let him stay overnight because I'm worried that you just get somebody who just happens to be roaming about, and rather than having a fist with them, you know, or
I know what you mean. So
in
3 or 4 years' time, your lad will be with mates, and they'll say, "I tell you, let's drive into London. Let's go to a nightclub. Let's go to this club. Let's go to that club." What's going to be your major concern then, Kimberly?
Yeah, his life. He's just fear for his life. You know, even now it's affecting how he. You know, think about when I used to grow up, hanging out.
Where did you grow
up?
You didn't grow up in Tunbridge Wells, I can tell by that accent. Where did you grow up?
Just outside Middlesbrough.
Outside Middlesbrough, okay.
Northeast.
Okay, and with your family or friends still back up in Middlesbrough, is there still that level of crime now, or is it a very different picture up there?
It's not too bad. Everything's closed now. Pubs have closed, all the clubs have closed where we used to go on an evening. So it's just local places that are open now. The whole thing's changed up there, you know, unfortunately. You know, so people don't go out. I think there's a big immigration problem in the centre of Middlesbrough that puts people off. But it's just a worry of everything's just stepped up a bit, isn't it? The violence is a little bit worse.
Mm. What's the biggest change in life from living in Middlesbrough to living in Tunbridge Wells?
The weather.
Really?
Much nicer.
Is it much better? Much better down in the soft south, as they call it. Kimberly, look after the boy. Fishing is, of course, fantastic. Great for his mental health, by the way, fishing. Said to be one of the great ways for anyone to relax, particularly if you have a stressful job. The other great way to relax is to work from home, because then you don't have to work on a Friday, or certainly only until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, according to research, before you'll shout at me, and we'll look at that a little bit later. Kimberly, look after the boy, thank you. Now, this story caught my eye this morning. It involves a tremendous actor, a huge fan of the work of Simon Pegg. He was speaking with the actress Jamila Jayle on what's called the Wrong Turns podcast, talking about how his ADHD affects his ability to drive.
On the day that I was in such a bad mood, or day after I did it as well, because I just felt my wife's disappointment in me. My daughter, bless her heart, was like, "You're right, Dad." And I looked up on the phone, do people with ADHD get into more car accidents than people who don't have it? And the answer was yes. And it's because of a lack of focus and an ability to totally focus. And that was the final kind of straw that broke my ADHD camel's back, when I think I need to speak to a psychiatrist and find out for sure that if I have this thing.
Which, do you think you could also just be rubbish?
No, I'm a good driver.
No, okay.
Let's all laugh about road accidents. They are hilarious because sometimes they kill people and often they seriously injure you. I can't think of a funnier subject, really. I do admire him, but this is utter nonsense. He was in Greece. He was reversing the car out. I did it the other day. I was backing out of the driveway where we were staying. I had five people in the car. Everyone was talking. I didn't look. I was checking the size of the car to make sure I was clear of the driveway. I didn't look at the rearview camera thing, and I hit a post. He says it's because of a lack of ability to kind of totally focus. Now, Mr. Pegg was given a six-month driving ban in 2021 after he was caught doing 63 miles an hour in a 40-mile zone. Prior to that, he'd amassed 13 penalty points from 4 speeding offences. In July last year, a judge imposed a year-long ban for further driving offences, and this is all down to ADHD. Can I tell you someone else who's got ADHD and has talked about it? That would be Sir Lewis Hamilton. Somehow he manages to drive, sometimes at speeds of around 200 miles an hour. So what credence do we give to that? And my thanks to Alan in Stoke Dabanon of making me aware of Sir Lewis, who apparently has talked of his condition. Jess is in Waltham Forest. Jess, what do you take from Mr. Pegg's comments? Good morning.
Hello. Hi, Nick. I mean, it sounds like a little bit of an excuse,
certainly,
backing into the post.
Yeah.
And I think you have to be really careful about making sweeping statements about people with ADHD being risky or dangerous drivers. My husband has ADHD, and he's a really good driver, and he's been driving all his life. He's never had any accidents, and he's a very safe and responsible driver. However, when he was younger, I know he did have some tickets for speeding. And I do understand that, obviously, you know, driving can present challenges if you've got ADHD, so...
Okay, I'll stop you there, because I don't have ADHD. Well, to my knowledge, well, I don't think I have ADHD. I've got all sorts of other problems, I'm sure.
Yeah.
What are the issues that you can be confronted with if you have ADHD behind the wheel?
So, I mean, for example, you might be more easily distracted, so you should have, you know, not have your phone near you, have it turned away, have it on silent, you know, maybe have a strategy to not change the radio channels while you're driving, because obviously, I mean, you probably shouldn't do that anyway, but having said that, if you've got ADHD, you might get much more distracted by what you're looking at on the radio and forget to look at the windscreen. So, you know, you can put things in place to make you a more safe driver if you've got ADHD. One of the traits of ADHD, of course, is impulsivity and not necessarily thinking about the consequences of what you're doing. So that could obviously lead to more risky or dangerous driving, like speeding, or maybe like changing a lane more suddenly, pulling into a lane and not thinking about it. But having said those things, if you've got ADHD that's severe, A, you should probably be medicated before you're driving anyway.
Yeah.
And also, you know, if you think you're not a safe driver, you shouldn't be driving. but I also think there's a lot of people with ADHD who can drive really well. So, it does sound a little bit like an excuse, certainly with the incident of him banging into a post.
You're always comfortable with your husband's driving?
Not always. Occasionally I complain that he drives too close to people when we're on the motorway. I always go, leave more of a safety.
It's called tailgating, I think, isn't it?
Tailgating. He doesn't do it really badly. Like he does. I'm just really, really anxious. I want lots of space. So I'm probably a bit overly cautious.
But broadly speaking, he's a good driver.
Most of the time, yeah. There are times where I go, Lloyd, just careful of your
We now know Lloyd's name.
Yes.
Okay, who's the best? If I need to get a lift even, from Waltham Forest to Heathrow Airport, who's the better driver, Jess or Lloyd?
Me.
Why?
Just because I'm more careful.
Give him my best wishes. Jess, thank you. Safe driving to both you and Lloyd. I love it. Every woman... I'd love a woman to ring in us. My husband is a truly appalling driver. His name's Clive, and he is a shocking driver. I am staggered we don't get involved in more accidents and we don't get nicked by the police. He just will not look when he comes out of a... I would love... Who was that? Kevin Keegan. I would love someone to ring and say, my husband is a... Oh, man alive, this would be brave. Nick, can I tell you something? What's that? My wife is shocking behind the wheel. Terrible driver. And her name is, I don't know, Lucy. That's what we need to hear. But are you brave enough to do it? We might do that. Also, coming up after the news, the truth is out, according to Virgin Media, who's done research, and they can track how much traffic, obviously, is on their various hubs and emails, internet offerings. And they see a marked drop-off at 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. Why might that be? The so-called working from home? We'll give you more on that. It's 9:30. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Thomas Watts.
A landmark ruling will be made by the Supreme Court this afternoon on car finance compensation. It'll decide whether or not to uphold an earlier judgment on secret commission paid to car dealers. President Trump's unveiled the next step of his tariff war against dozens of US trading partners. The levies of up to 41% will take effect in a week, but Canada is facing an immediate hike to 35%.
5%. Mr. Trump's special envoy is due to inspect an aid distribution site in Gaza. The White House says Steve Witkoff, who held talks in Israel yesterday, will hear firsthand about the dire situation on the ground. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many. Some showers in central and eastern England. A high of 22 degrees.
This is LBC.
Calling all little explorers. The hunt for squishmallows is on. Who will your little one find in their Happy Meal? Would they chill out with Cam on the beach? Or rock on with Hallie? Some fun, some food, it's all inside this Happy Meal. Until the 25th of August, from 11 a.m, Squishmallows comprise toys only. Subject to availability. Fair ordering policy applies.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quarter Pillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And four giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
How do you grow a perfectly sweet strawberry? Well, it takes more than just soil and water, but time, care, and the best conditions to flourish. At Tesco, we keep every strawberry warm during the day and cold during the night to ensure they develop the sweetest flavour.
Mm.
It may seem like a little thing, but to us, it's everything. Now, if you don't mind, the strawberries are sleeping. Tesco, every little helps.
40 million people listen to commercial radio each week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's a Friday. It's just gone 9:30. So for many of you, what's that? Just another, what, four, 5 or so hours? Because you're not...
working 9 to 5.
Me saying it's Virgin Media, and they should know they provide broadband services across the whole of the country, and they've been doing some research, and guess what? They discover that 3 p.m. on a Friday you're working from home, and this is Virgin Media, it's time to log off and get ready for your weekend, to go to the pub garden, jump in the car, see your friends or do whatever. That is the reality, isn't it? Now, let's track this back. Britain, by the way, has a pretty unenviable record here. The top country in Europe for remote working. 42% of you are either fully or partially WFH, working from home, according to the Office for National Statistics. COVID had a massive impact on this, of course, because companies, when it first started, do you remember, and they must rue the day, they didn't have a choice, because they did their financial reports, we've got to ask, do you know, it's made no impact at all on productivity, because they say that, because their share price will crash otherwise. You know, we're just about hanging on by our bootstraps here. What? Pull out of that firm. Pull out quick. Do you know, it makes no difference, and we've got a happy and settled workforce. Now, let me say here and now, the reality is that, of course, we will never go back to 5 days a week, 46 weeks a year, whatever it was. I can't remember what it was now. Never, ever go back to that. But, and in some industries... it probably does work, particularly if you are a related industry, if you're in the computer industry, or you design things, you're in the internet, whatever that, I get it. But for jobs like of which that I'm familiar, such as journalism, whether it be in a radio studio, television studio, or a newspaper office, it's quite helpful to have the people there. And as I've said many times, companies spend fortunes trying to build the idea of culture and workplace and fostering friendliness and workplace relations, whatever else it might be, and company mottos and company drives and company ethos. Well, there's no bloody point doing that if half the company aren't coming in on a Friday. That is the reality, isn't it, Deborah in Birmingham? Good morning.
No, Mr. Ferrari.
You can call me Nick. You can call me Nick if you like, Deborah.
Oh, well, I will call you Nick. And no, it isn't.
Oh, right. Why not, Deborah?
Well, I don't know who did the survey, but
Virgin Media.
Okay, yes, you said that. Yeah, well, they can't have surveyed social workers because...
God, they're never at work.
Shut up you. rude much. I've just looked on. I sent my last email at 6:45 last night, and I logged on just after 7 o'clock this morning. And I will not be logging off at 4:15 when my contracted hours end. I will probably be logging off about 6 o'clock.
Well, you should work harder.
Oh, again, me and you are going to pause it, mate. You escaped me.
I know you can't. We have to be careful here because obviously the work you do, it does, I imagine, at times involve vulnerable clients. What is it that you, what can you go into for me? Give me a little bit of detail of what you actually do, Deborah.
Okay, so I'm a child protection social worker.
Oh, you poor woman.
No, don't say that.
I've
been a social worker for 25 years.
But let's just say you visit my home, then we can keep it safe. And you have real concerns about how I'm treating a child, and you just cannot get your boss to take action. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night with fear the child's going to, you know, not come through.
No, but if you were really, really causing your child significant harm, my bosses and my senior managers would take action.
We
would not be leaving a child in unsafe circumstances.
It's worth saying, folk like you are dealing with thousands, probably tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of cases up and down this country every day of every week of every year. And we don't hear about it because it goes well. But when it goes badly, it is...
And that's the only time you ever hear about it.
But why do they go wrong? I'm not going to say so often because it's not... But why are there such high-profile cases, do you think, Deborah?
Things go wrong. I mean, I can't talk about those cases because serious cases reviews have happened and those have been published and people can look them up to see what the recommendations and the outcomes as to why things have unfortunately gone the way that they have gone for those children. But working with people is complex and complicated, and it is becoming increasingly complex and complicated with every passing year. You've just spent the last hour talking about knife crime and the availability of knives so all of these modern things that we are now dealing with that we never had to deal with before, the internet, etc. All of those, you know, cost of living, all of those things make life for all of us increasingly difficult and place adults, vulnerable adults and children in increasingly dangerous situations that people like me and the police and other services, mental health services and education, have to try and manage.
You said you've been doing this, was it 20 years or 25 years?
25 years.
25 years, okay. And you do what, 4 days a week in an office or 3 days a week or?
No, during COVID, working all the way through the pandemic, obviously working from home. Since we've come out of lockdown, my particular employer requires us to have certain days when we come into the office and the rest of the time we're out in the community, seeing our families, seeing our young people.
How many days of a week would you go into the office, would you say?
I'm required to be in the office twice a week. But I may go into the office more frequently. So if I have meetings or if I need to see people in the office, I will be in the office more frequently.
For someone, if you were starting out 25 years ago, if we take you back to 25 years ago, how important was it, though, that you could be in an office to see how your then senior colleagues worked?
I'm not disputing that, Nick. But I'm not saying that working from home is or isn't ideal. And it is so important, particularly during this job, that you can touch down and touch base with your colleagues if you've had a particularly stressful visit. But what I would say is when I go into the office, my team members might not be there, but other people from other teams are, and I can talk to them, I can offload to them. So the environment amongst the staff becomes supportive.
Okay. So I'll be able to call you at, say, 4:30 this afternoon. You'll still be hard at it in front of your laptop or whatever.
I might be out on a visit, Nick, so you might not even be able to get hold of me, mate.
Look after yourself, Deborah. I've enjoyed our conversation. Good luck for that incredibly challenging field that you're in. Now, it's, as I've said already, Virgin Media did this. They spoke to some of the people involved. Their research says that 59% of the people they surveyed said they didn't feel guilty at all, switching off at 3 in the afternoon. 61% said they'd earned the right after a busy week. 63% said they're more productive earlier in the week if they had an earlier Friday finish. Well, I tell you what, why don't you take Thursday off as well? We'll just have you Monday to Wednesday. Where does that argument end? We might come to that. But we're talking about Simon Pegg, great actor. I would argue not a particularly great driver, perhaps. Certainly a fast driver, but it's because he's got ADHD. Ian's in Stafford. Good morning, Ian.
Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm all right. What are you going to tell me? Do you have ADHD?
I do, yeah. Diagnosed early this year, but I've been a truck driver for nearly 10 years now.
Have you? Okay.
Yep.
What made you think you might have it? What were the symptoms that you thought, I'm going to go and get this checked?
Sort of the way I am, really. Really impulsive. All the kind of stuff that... My children had it, and it was very evident, and they got looked at and diagnosed. And they said it was hereditary, and just the way I am, like, as an adult, as a child or a young person, I was always very impulsive, wasn't good at school, didn't listen, all the usual stuff, didn't really think much of it. But as an adult, sort of things like managing money and, you know, anything really to do with personality, that was always a bit funny.
Okay. So
it was definitely something.
How does it affect your driving?
It doesn't, if I'm honest with you. I mean...
But you said you're quite an impulsive bloke. I mean, impulsive bloke. Did you say you're a truck driver, yeah?
I am, yes.
Well, that might mean you come out of a junction because you just, yeah, I've got enough room. He's far enough off. I'll be able to get it up to speed. Isn't that how impulsivity could look? Impulsiveness, even?
That's exactly how it can look, to be honest. But, so, everyone's different. Everyone sort of has their own sort of way. But one of the traits of ADHD is hyper-focusing.
Right.
And as a driver, you know, I know where I'm going, I know what I'm doing, and I sort of hyper-focus on that situation or the job. Also, you do get inattentiveness. But when you are driving a truck, and I am talking about trucks...
Hmm. Is this like what I'd call a lorry? I mean, one of those enormous...
A lorry, yeah.
Yeah, tractor-trailer jobs.
Yeah,
right.
One.
Yeah, right.
I drive a tanker.
Right. Like a petrol tanker?
No, it's a powder tanker. I deliver bulk flour.
Okay, all right.
So, yeah, you do in your head, you know, I could go now, but is it safe? Is it really? You do need to have a certain presence of mind. But after hearing, you know, Simon Pegg's driving record, I think he should stick to being a great actor, maybe employ a driver, you know?
Safe driving, Ian, thank you. Nadia's in Bristol. Nadia, you want to talk about the Simon Pegg story. Good morning.
Good morning. I work with young people with who are neurodivergent in Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got dyspraxia and my partner's got ADHD. And I wanted to relate to what Ian was saying. In fact, ADHD kind of impacts everybody in so many different ways. We've all got our own personalities. It's not going to touch one person in one way and one person in another.
Is it going to make someone drive too quickly?
So it can do.
Really?
But also... I think it's more sort of, it can do, but also there is also an element of, because you're not paying attention.
But the logical extension of your argument is we better ban people from driving with ADHD then.
Not necessarily. It depends on the person.
Well, possibly then.
So also, but then also one thing that I try and advocate for is not everybody that is driving should be able to drive, or so it is up to the individual to be able to think to themselves, well, okay, this is something that I have. I'm not able to drive safely. I'm not able to.
So are you talking about yourself personally now, or another person?
I'm talking about myself, but also about people with ADHD or with other conditions.
So just to clarify, you don't feel comfortable driving?
I don't drive because I'm neurodivergent, and I'm unsafe on the road.
And what?
So because of my condition.
Why would that be? What makes you feel you'd be unsafe? How does your neurodivergency affect your driving ability?
So I have a lack of spatial awareness, speed awareness.
Okay. And
I struggle with concentrating on a lot of things at the same time.
So you put me in a car and there's information left, right and centre, and I just go into freeze mode.
You
and
can't
I just
handle it. I get it.
And I just can't handle it. Okay. So I've tried for many years and then I was just like, right, this isn't made for me and that's okay.
Was it quite nerve-wracking trying to drive then?
Yes.
Was it?
Okay. Very. Okay. But it was more the vision from other people around. So having people being like, oh, why don't you drive? Why can't you drive? And it's just like, well, because it isn't safe for me. It isn't safe for other people. And I just can't do it. And it doesn't mean that I can't have a job. It doesn't mean that I can't contribute to the society, to things, to just, yeah, to be an adult.
So you would say, in fairness to Simon Pegg, that it could actually affect his ability to drive.
I think it could do. I think it's up to every individual to sort of think that driving is a dangerous thing to do. You are in a big metal box and you can go at like 100, you can go at 60 miles per hour.
Well, you can go a lot faster than that. You can be doing 120 miles an hour in a vehicle that weighs 1.5 tonnes that's metal and glass. I hear what you're saying. Nadia, safe travelling when you do it. Thank you. We're also talking about working from home. Lou says companies also spout about wellness and quality, yet the one thing which actually did anything for this is the one thing some still want to reverse. People have forgotten that working from home on a Friday has been a thing for 15 years. Clocking off at 3 on a Friday when I started work 20 years ago. The whole of management were in the pub from lunch. Well, I suppose that's true. Peter says, everyone whose job works with vulnerable children. No, social workers' phones go to answer machine. Oh, gosh, if Deborah's listening, you'll be in trouble. From 1 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, no point calling them. After 5 p.m, forget it. It's out-of-hours call centres, no matter how service. They never come to see the young people, especially if they're challenging. Deborah's listening. I wonder what she makes of that. The 9:45 LBC News headlines now, though. Thomas Watts.
The Supreme Court is due to make its ruling on car finance compensation, which could put millions of motorists in line for payouts. Donald Trump's unveiled the next step of his tariff war against dozens of US trading partners, and two American officials will visit Gaza later to inspect a food distribution site. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for many, but some showers in central and eastern parts of England, a high of 22 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Lucy Knowles. There are delays in Enfield with one lane closed on the A10 in Bushill Park due to a collapsed manhole northbound at Lee Road. In Neasden, there are queues on the A406 North Circular westbound from the M1 Junction 1 for Staples Corner to Neasden Interchange. The A23 Brighton Road and Purley is stop starts both ways near Old Lodge Lane due to emergency repairs. In Beckton, the A13 is slow westbound from Woolwich Manor Way to Canning Town. That's because of an accident. Things are slow in Battersea on Battersea Bridge northbound from Prince of Wales Drive to Chelsea Embankment, and on the trains there are delays of up to an hour on South Western Railway between Virginia Water and Feltham and Windsor and Eton Riverside and Feltham. That's due to signal problems.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
What jobs did your parents do when you were 14? That is how the civil service is going to decide whether or not you're working class.
James O'Brien on LBC.
Oh, how relaxing was that yoga session? I feel so free.
Speak for yourself. I can never let go.
Bladder leaks. I know, right? I'm so done compromising. I got a new bit of yoga kit. Always discreet pads. Here, try for yourself next week.
Love you lots, but this thin pad won't keep up with my heavy leaks.
Just trust me on this one. So, all zen and liberated, are we?
Let's just say I found my flow.
Always discreet. Live with no compromise.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
What makes Matchday? You know Maggie's cafe is the vibe.
Mate, piking all day, every day.
Mark, the cabbie, bigger fan than we are.
Banging out some Not the Top 20 on the way to the game.
It's a great podcast.
All the expert pundits down the dog and duck.
Oh, Kebab Palace, he gets the chilli-garlic ratio spot on.
Match Day is about more than just the game. It's an experience shared with local businesses at the heart of every EFL club and community. That's why we're proud to support the businesses behind the badge. Sage, official accounting software partner of the EFL.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £145 million.
That's enough to get your hands in the air.
Woo! Wow, you really don't care.
Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. You don't need to use a CNC. You can claim direct to your lender and the Financial Ombudsman for free. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
Search Kayak for great deals on Wait, that doesn't say flights. Search Kayak for great deals on car hire? With Kayak, you can compare hundreds of car rental sites to find great deals. Even better, you see costs up front. And if it's flexibility you're after, Kayak's got a handy free cancellation filter. Lovely stuff. So next time you're searching for flight, car hire, at home or for your holes, search Kayak and go see for yourself.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's talk a little bit about working from home. This is a non-story, says Dean in Wolverhampton. You love what you do. There's thousands of people out there who don't. Clocking off early is all about life-work balance. If your employer is happy with it and what you do, there really shouldn't be an issue. Alex says, you need to let this go. Well, it's not me, with respect, actually. It's Virgin Media that's done it. Companies decide for themselves. Staff taking 2 hours off on Friday is good for morale. Well, I'll tell you what, let's take 4 hours off, and that'll be doubly good for morale. That'll be even better, wouldn't it? Where's this one? Jimmy Hanley, what time are you knocking off, Nick? Bit of luck, I'll be out the door by 10:15, I would have thought. I'll give him 15 minutes today. But, man, I've been here since 6:45. I mean, it's a long old day. Tanya's in East Horsley, you're on the radio. Good morning, Tanya.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Yes.
I'm so sad about little diddums who have to work 4 days a week. Back in the 60s, I was in advertising, and I finished up in the Fleet Street area.
Oh, bad luck.
I was a media planner buyer. Fleet Street, as you may remember, you're probably a bit young for this, but it was basically advertising, the press, and the law.
Yeah, of course.
And we had 2 weeks holiday a year. I worked 9:15 to 5:30. If Christmas Day and Boxing Day were on a weekend, you had half a day off on the Friday or the Monday.
I don't know that we want to return to those days, do we?
No. But, I mean,
this is a bit like the Monty Python sketch. You were lucky. We dreamed of living in a hole in the road or something like that. I don't know that we necessarily... We used to have to eat gravel in the morning, or however that sketch goes. I don't know. There is a happy medium, isn't there? Because I don't think anyone wants to go back to the days that you endured.
No. And I expect you did as well,
I'm not as bad as that. I mean, of course it was a 5-day week. And yeah, you had to work Boxing Days, Christmas Days. Yeah, I've done all that. But I don't know where we want to go. I think there is something in the middle, and it's not unreasonable for employers to expect their staff to come into an office.
No, I absolutely agree with you. Travel is much more expensive these days. And of course, you've got computers, which we didn't have. Everything had to be written down or typed or something. And very much over drinks, as far as I was concerned, which was great.
Yes.
Probably drank in every watering hole in Fleet Street.
Okay, let's go. Did you go to the wine press? Tipperary?
Probably.
Did you go to the Tipperary?
Yes.
You went to the top?
I think you mean the Wigan Pen.
I think you spent too much time in the Wigan Pen to call it the Pig and Wen. Did you go to the Harrow? Did you go to the Harrow?
Don't remember that.
Elvino's?
We're talking a lot.
I've been drunk in all of them.
You weren't allowed to stand in the front there. You had to, as a woman, you had to go to the back.
That was Elvina's. Absolutely. It's not now, I hasten to add, before they start taking angry lawsuits, but years gone by, if you took your girlfriend, or if a woman wanted to go, they weren't allowed to buy a drink. You had to sit them at the back. Those weren't the days, though. Tanya, thank you. Great to hear all our yesterdays, but honestly, we must move on. I don't think that is the way forward, to go backward. But I guess it gives us an idea of what the workplace was like. Let's just do a couple of notes to finish off education. Sorry, to finish other conversations, one of which was education and the problems with SEND. Glyn in North Somerset, I says, well, I'm roughly the same age when there wasn't this SEND mental issues when we were at school. My question, is there investigation going on as to why there's been such an increase? Glyn, I think there's better diagnosis. I think of my time in school, and I think of a couple, particularly one lad in class who I won't name, but I now realise he had all sorts of issues, and he used to get teased mercilessly. And I remember once thinking, that's not right, because I had a brother with mobility issues. So I thought, I'm going to stand up for this lad. I got smacked right on the nose because I stood up for him. It was a pretty brutal class, to be honest with you. But now I realise that lad, he probably wouldn't have been in our class, actually. He really did have you. So I hear what you're saying, but I don't know. On the subject of ADHD and whether it affects your driving, Paul Simpson, I have ADHD. I'm also a racing driver. I've won championships, not at the same level of Sir Lewis Hamilton. He, by the way, has spoken of his ADHD. Driving at low speeds does not stimulate my brain, so I can get distracted or switch off. Driving at speed allows me to fully concentrate on the one task at hand, Paul told the magistrate. Kieran's in Banbury on this. Hello, Kieran.
Hello, Nick. First time caller. Best show on the radio.
Oh, I don't know that. It's very sweet of you. We do what we can. Do you have ADHD?
No, not that I know of.
Are you a driver?
Yes.
Are you a good driver?
No. You said earlier on that you would like someone's wife to phone in and my husband's name is Kieran and he's an absolutely atrocious driver. Well, I thought I'd better preempt her and get in quick because my wife, Sandra, is a far better driver than I'll ever be.
Right.
It's a weird way. I took 6 lessons before I passed my test first time. She took, I've lost count of how many lessons she took, and she passed her test on my... But I put it down. Sandra's cautious. She's a bit risk adverse. I'm impulsive and a bit of a risk taker.
Right.
She does tell anybody I give a lift to. She says, "Well, you won't ask him a second time."
Well, okay. So I was to ask you to drive me from Banbury to the studios in Leicester Square. What am I in for? You don't observe traffic lights, speed limits, lanes. You tailgate. What is it?
The first thing that I would have to go on the motorway, and I hate motorway driving. It's boring, and I think you get a chance to sort of switch off if you're doing it.
I'm nervous already, so I'm not coming down the M40 with
lanes, you. All around Banbury, there's lovely scenery, country, villages.
Right.
And I'll bomb around the country lanes. I used to drive, for my business, I used to drive anything from cars to big transit vans, and I'd bomb around them. There's no problem whatsoever.
Right.
But my wife's very cautious in the country lanes because, there might be a tractor around the corner. So,
there might be a tractor around the corner, Kieran.
But my hand-eye coordination's pretty good, and I can hit the brakes and swerve.
But I'd rather just have a smooth drive than just miss a ditch by millimetres. OK, Sandra, mind you, would give me a lovely, quiet, safe drive to Leicester Square.
You'd sleep in the back of the car, you'd get out refreshed at the other end. I'd never be a chauffeur or a taxi driver. We do it once, Nick, but as my wife says, you'd never go with him again.
Look after yourself. Give my best to Sandra. Thank you, Kieran. 30 seconds to David in Daventry. You have ADHD. How does that affect your driving? David?
Hi, Nick. How are you?
How does it affect your driving, sir?
Well, I find the whole ADHD and driving thing... I was only diagnosed about 6 weeks ago with ADHD, but I've obviously suffered... Mm. with this condition for the whole of my life.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I've done 31 years on the road. I do an average of about 30,000 miles a year, which is quite high. I've never hit a thing, not even a squirrel.
So you've no problems.
Well, I seem to find that when I'm driving that other people... When I'm driving as a passenger, the other drivers, the neuronormals, they're missing everything. All the sort of things that I see...
I'm over time. Just tell me one thing that you see that you think other folk don't. And just one, if you would, David.
I predict what other people are going to do.
Wow. Well, I need to know the horse racing from you. David, safe driving. Thank you. I'm over time. I'm done for, another week, aren't I? James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'll be back with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and I wonder whether that's a motoring topic or a neurodiversity topic. If it's a motoring topic, of course, we can't go near it. But if it's a neurodiversity topic, then we may return to that a little later in the programme. We're going to begin at Heathrow. There's a tasty, if you like, political standoff here with Keir Starmer and the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, very much at odds with each other. There are environmental consequences, of course, to plans for the third runway and £50 billion worth of investment. I'm going to cautiously suggest to you that if it does go ahead, the final bill will be rather higher than the current estimates. But is it actually something that we need to do to keep our country relevant?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Supreme Court will make its long-awaited ruling on car finance compensation this afternoon. It could pave the way for millions of motorists to reclaim hidden commission, paid by lenders to car dealers. The court will decide whether or not to uphold a previous ruling that found the payments were unlawful. Personal finance analyst Alice Hain says firms could be on the hook for billions of pounds.
What was happening was dealers were signing up customers to these finance deals, and then they were being paid commission by lenders, but they weren't necessarily disclosing it. And there were also cases in the past where they secured a higher interest rate on the loan, and that was known as discretionary commission arrangements, then they were banned by regulators in 2021. But lots of lenders have set aside huge amounts of money in preparation for this.
Financial markets in London and across Europe are trading down this morning after the latest US tariffs announcement. President Trump has raised levies on imports from many of America's trading partners. Canada's Prime Minister Mark Carney says he's disappointed that his country's rate will rise to 35% immediately. Two senior US officials have reportedly arrived in Gaza, where they are expected to visit aid distribution sites. Israeli broadcasters say Special Envoy Steve Witkoff and Mike Huckabee, the US ambassador to Israel, are in Rafah. Hundreds of people have died in recent weeks while queuing for food supplies. The government is to limit its main internship scheme to students from working-class backgrounds. Ministers say they want Whitehall to truly reflect the country. Eligibility will reportedly be determined by the occupations of an applicant's parents when they were 14. Pace bowler Chris Wokes has been ruled out of the rest of England's first test against India. He injured his shoulder on the opening day at the Oval, where the tourists are set to resume on 204 for 6 this morning. England need to avoid defeat to win the five-match series. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading down 59 points at 90.73. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 15. LBC weather, most places dry with some sunny spells. Showers developing in central and eastern England, a high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Hey Sainsbury's, any way you can save me a few quid on my weekly shop?
Well, Jane, try Your Nectar Prices. Every week in Your Nectar app, you can unlock up to 10 personalised discounts on things you love at Sainsbury's. A Janesbury's, if you will.
Sounds like my kind of place.
Get personalised discounts with Your Nectar Prices. That's good food for all of us. Janesbury's. I mean Sainsbury's. 18 plus Nectar app required. Unlock up to 10 Your Nectar Prices weekly. Available in supermarkets, online and in locals with Smart Shop. TNCs apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10, a very good morning indeed to you. How do you want to do this? I find it fascinating. Politically, it's very interesting that Keir Starmer and Sadiq Khan are at genuine loggerheads. The Mayor of London really doesn't want the third runway at Heathrow to go ahead. A sort of massive £50 billion expansion of our can you have a flagship airport? Is that the right way of describing it? Our sort of national airport. And Keir Starmer, it emerges today, is absolutely committed to it. A shovel-ready plan has been submitted by the airport management that would see a two-mile-long runway cross a diverted M25 and allow more than 750 additional flights a day over London. There's a little wobble for me there on a personal level. I live in the flight path, on the flight path, and that is unlikely to get better with 750 more flights coming in. I'm tempted to do a phone-in on the importance of airports, and I don't mean that logistically. I mean it almost reputationally, about what it says to a rival about the country you are arriving in. Do you do this a bit? Do you sort of find that your first impression of an entire country can be based upon the airport that you land at. And if it's a little bit frayed around the edges, you step out of the terminal feeling a little bit different from how you would feel if it was shiny and new. I don't know. I've just sort of clocked myself doing that a couple of times. I remember as a kid, I didn't travel much as a kid. It wasn't really an option. It was sort of ferries and car trips to campsites in Brittany when and that was in a good year. Otherwise, it was up to my great uncle's cottage in Filey, just outside Scarborough. But when I did go on a trip with school and we landed at, I think, Zurich Airport, I thought I'd landed in the future. I remember being absolutely gobsmacked. There was a little place, and remember, this is going back nearly sort of 40 years or so, that they had seats with their own screens. You could go and sit somewhere in the terminal. I think it was Zurich or Geneva. It was definitely in Switzerland. And you had this little lounge where there were individual screens that you could watch. I don't think there was much on them, and it wasn't in English. But still, it was really exciting. It was like being in Star Trek. And I think that coloured my whole view of Switzerland for the rest of my life. But then again, we're not all 10-year-old boys, are we, going on our sort of first ever aeroplane ride? 6 minutes after 10 is the time. You land at some places in Greece, where I go quite a lot, and they're pretty ramshackle, actually, but it doesn't necessarily influence your entire view of the country. I think, and I suspect this is quite an important position, I think we need something huge and international at this point in our, like you call it, historical cycle. I really do. I think that it is wrong of the Mayor of London to resist the idea of a smashing great new development at Heathrow. It announces to the world that we are serious and forward-looking, and quite a few of you are reminding me of my childhood holidays in Morecambe as well. It's nice to know that my anecdotes have a little bit of a shelf life. But what is it that I'm trying to articulate? It's like the kind of brand Britain. That's a dreadful phrase, isn't it? But brand Britain would be enormously enhanced if the first point of arrival were to be state-of-the-art, bang up to date, all bells and whistles and exciting. Is that enough reason to support it? Does it also mean that elements of the conversation about global warming or carbon emissions or pollution have, as we've suspected on the programme a few times recently, have somehow been quietened, even among those of us who recognise the urgency of the situation? Environmental campaigners have called the Heathrow expansion a doomed scheme that would release millions of tonnes of carbon dioxide while benefiting only a small minority of rich flyers. And that, I think, is the perfect dichotomy. Thank you, Ian. You're right. The word I'm looking for is prestige. Is prestige something worth pursuing to the detriment of environment? 03456060973. The idea that if you do build a new runway, it will only benefit a small number of rich people seems to me to be close to ridiculous, not least the fact that you've got minimum of £50 billion worth of investment, which will go into jobs and infrastructure that people in this country will be doing. So you've got that growth element of the proposal on this side of the scales. You've got the prestige or the announcement to the world element of the proposal on this side of the scales. And the only thing you've really got on the other side of the scales is NIMBYism and environmental concern, which is a little bit misplaced because these planes are going to fly anyway. It's just a question of where they're going to land and where they're going to go. 9 minutes after 10 is the time. I don't know that the question of how important is an airport quite lands yet. So let's change it slightly to the question of whether or not we need in this country a whopping great statement of ambition and intent. And if we do, it's hard to think of anything better than a new runway at Heathrow.